If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
We are back in Chicago, and it is time for our weekly salute to the week that was. So run to the window, throw open the sash, and let's all join Johnny. Because we have no secrets, I have to ask, did you hurt your back with that one?
No. It actually felt kind of good to sit up straight and just let her rip.
Yes, boys and girls, once again, Johnny's back decided to...
Seize up.
To go out.
Yeah. I picked up a writing pen on the desk on Sunday and let out a scream that I thought, who's that? That's me. And I quickly realized that I was not going to be able to walk normally and sit or lie down. And so it's been a real interesting week.
So if Johnny sounds like she's speaking a little more out of her head than usual tonight, she is partially medicated. And I got some steroids. And wearing a brace, too.
Yes, I'm wearing a metal and Velcro brace, which... you can hurt yourself putting it on and taking it off because the Velcro is so strong that when you try to take it off, you're like, oh, God, that hurts. That really hurts.
And for those of you who are ready to text, epidural, that's that's going to happen.
Ironically, one of my favorite things about Facebook is the memories. When the page comes up and says...
Oh, yeah, this was weird.
Yes, on this day last year, July, on this day, I said, well... I'm out of commission for a while. And I looked in and said, why? And I realized, same thing had happened. What am I doing in July that...
Now, did it have anything to do with the fact? Because if you were listening last week, you know, we weren't here. You heard older, pre-used words last week because of NASCAR.
Regurgitated words.
because we were sitting at home watching NASCAR, and you got into it.
That was therapeutic.
Yeah.
It really was. We had a wonderful 4th of July party. There were about 20 of us gathered for the 4th of July party. And, you know, maybe that's it. Maybe I just, I partied too hard. And then 2 days later, it caught up with me. I don't know. You know, those dirty Dr. Peppers that I was sharing with the masses? Have you guys heard that dirty beverages are the thing this summer?
Why?
It's just like...
Is there an umbrella definition for dirty when it comes to beverage?
Well it used to mean alcohol, but right. Now it means cream. Okay. You put cream in your soda. Bob, does this sound good to you?
No.
I think it's kind of a girl thing, because you can go to Sonic and you can say, I want a dirty lime crush or whatever, and they put real cream on top of it.
They don't just reach down and grab some sand and throw it in your drink?
No, no. No, don't be funny, okay? Or don't try to be funny. So a dirty Dr. Pepper, a new thing in the... What's the word? I'm using my hands to demonstrate. This is the refrigerator department at Mariano's.
Yeah.
I'm showing you where it is. And on the top shelf above all the other coffee mate that's for your coffee are these dirty creamers. And that's literally what it says, dirty Dr. Pepper or dirty Orange Crush. And so you take a glass of ice and you can put your zero sugar, whatever you want, because after all, you're going to have real cream poured on top.
Yeah.
And the dirty Dr. Pepper cream is actually lime and coconut. Oh my, is it good.
Okay, what song is now going through
put
my
head? Put the lime and the coconut and mix it all together. Call Me in the Morning?
Call Me in the Morning. It was, the guy that did Everybody's Talking, Harry Nilsson.
Yes.
It was from an album, was it from The Point? No.
No.
I loved Harry Nilsson. Interviewed him several times. Loved
it. Interesting song for him, too.
Put the lime in the coconut to mix it all together. Lime and the coconut.
Yes. So now you're making me want a dirty Dr. Pepper. Okay, I'm going to turn to Julian, even though I'm having difficulty turning. Does this sound interesting, appetizing, or weird to you?
I would say all three.
Okay, well then.
There you go.
It's
I
a threefer. Okay.
I feel like there are better words than a dirty Dr. Pepper.
Oh, well, I guess in bartending, and you were a barista for many years, did they ever do dirty coffee drinks? I don't think so.
No, because, well, you're saying adding milk or cream to a soda. Milk and cream were the base of these drinks.
Yeah, with a shot of coffee, if you're lucky. If you get a venti, you might get an ounce of coffee and the rest of it's milk and cream and all that good stuff.
Or if you're one of those crazies that likes cappuccinos and it's just all foam.
Yes. Oh, I don't have enough foam on my cappuccino. So that was one of the things I thoroughly enjoyed. So maybe my back had gone out and I just didn't know it because I was all dirty Dr. Peppered.
You were having a good time.
Yes, and we all had a really good time, even though it's really, really hot.
Yeah.
And
we realized we've been doing this for 5 years with our neighbors, and it's a wonderful gathering. It's a mix of people from all over the planet and really nice people.
Yep. Bob, you were here for the... NASCAR. The face. That's as good as my demonstrating the dairy department at Mariano's.
Yes, I was here by myself. Just
were you?
Pondering the world.
Was it difficult getting in here?
No.
Really?
No.
Huh.
I took my Lollapalooza way, so
oh, your
I
secret way.
All of that.
Yeah. Good. Good, good, good. Well, we have a whole bunch of things coming up tonight. Oh, my gosh.
And we'll tell you about all of them after we take a break, take care of some business.
So you got no excuse. You've got no excuse. So
and I'm driving the radio station, so good luck. Hang on, kids.
Brother bought a coconut, he bought it for the dime. His sister had another one, she paid it for the lime. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank and pulled up. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank and pulled up. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank and pulled up. She put the lime in the coconut,
she called a doctor, woke him up and said, "Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take?" I said, "Doctor, to relieve his bellyache." I said, "Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take?" I said, "Doctor, to relieve his bellyache." Now let me get this straight. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and bowed up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and bowed up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and bowed up.
I love Harry Nilsson.
Nilsson Schmilsson. Yeah. Was the album that was on, 1972.
That was a great time in his career.
And wasn't that during that 7-Up commercial with the guy that had that wonderful David Jennings voice?
Oh, yeah. David, do you remember who that guy was? Remember those old 7-Up commercials? The guy had a wonderful accent, and he would talk about the Uncola.
Oh, yes.
The Uncola.
Yes.
Yeah, who
that
was
guy.
That guy was so gay. Wasn't he a model or something?
Oh, he was gorgeous.
I think he was an actor.
He was a gorgeous human being.
Let me do some digging.
By the way, this is David Jennings in the newsroom tonight.
Yes.
Because Ron is in New York to see the Cubs and Yankees, and thank goodness he got there today for their win and not yesterday for their shellacking.
Yeah.
That would really stink if you went all the way to New York and they lost 10 to nothing.
11.
Oh, it was 11
to nothing?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was. Oh, yeah. They had their clock cleaned.
Yeah.
It was not pretty.
Yes. So the dude was bald.
Yeah, I know. I remember.
Yeah.
Well-dressed.
And ironically,
I believe he was either West Indian or Jamaica.
Yes. Yeah,
Jamaican.
He had a wonderful accent.
Yes.
Jeffrey.
Yeah. You, good. Collectively, we can come up with one thought.
We're all working on this. And I'm
Jeffrey Holder.
Okay.
Oh.
And he was a Bond actor.
He was a James Bond actor.
Oh,
yes, he was.
Oh, he was in the...
Roger Moore, movies.
Yes.
Jane Seymour, I believe, was in this one too.
Yeah, and it's the one where they wound up down in New Orleans for a while.
Yeah, and then they went into some more interesting and uncomfortable places.
They claimed that was 1983. I felt like it was earlier than the 80s for the Uncola with Jeffrey Holder.
I thought so too.
Crisp and clean, the Uncola. Remember, he laughed. He had that great laugh.
Oh, that laugh.
Give us that.
She was in the film Live and Let Die.
Live and Let Die.
Yeah.
Yes. All right, David, give us an Uncola laugh like Jeffrey Holder did.
Close, sort of, maybe.
Good.
A little.
Yeah, that's good. You could stay at least until 11:40 tonight.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. We just went into the Wayback Machine.
Yeah, boy.
So
by the way, there is something more about that commercial.
What?
It broke racial barriers within the 7-Up company, which until then had never used a black actor.
Really?
In any of its ads on television.
Really?
That doesn't surprise
really?
Me. Yeah.
Huh.
83. I'm actually looking at the commercial. So funny.
Interracial couples are everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Yes. The dirty Dr. Pepper just took us down this road.
It did.
Does it sound interesting to you, David, the dirty Dr. Pepper?
What is Dirty Dr. Pepper?
Well, as I was saying, it's the new Coffee Mate creamer that is lime and coconut. And you put it in your Dr. Pepper. And in my case, I dirty it up with a little rum.
That's why we were playing put the lime and
the
coconut to mix it all together.
Ah, so, it all
see,
comes
see, there,
together.
There actually is a thread going on here.
Okay. I'm slow to get to catch on. I do apologize.
I have medication I can share with you.
No, I'll pass.
You're that's, driving,
that doesn't,
right?
That doesn't help me.
Okay.
We should mention a little bit of what we have coming up tonight.
Yes,
because,
yes.
Boy, we're going to be all over the map tonight. A little later tonight, we're going to talk with one of our friends from the Panhandle, Aaron Bearden. He is the owner of Instant Replay Sports. And sports cards and collectibles are through the roof right now. And there is a huge event that is going to be coming up in a few weeks
in the
Chicago area.
Out in Rosemont. Very big deal. And I was curious. I thought, well, you know, is this whole field of collectibles dying out? No, it's getting bigger.
And bigger and bigger.
Bigger money is being exchanged for these cards. And Aaron now has a television show where he talks about collecting cards.
And also a little later tonight, we're going to revisit. It was 46 years ago tonight. I know exactly where I was.
Yes.
And I will share a little bit of a personal reflection on what happened 46 years ago tonight. At a White Sox game, Disco Demolition.
Right.
Ooh.
And we're also going to be joined by a very cool guy, Vince Lawrence. He is a producer. He has.
Wait a minute. You know Vince?
Well, did we do tonight?
He's
going to
be on with us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he coming in?
No.
No, he's going to be on the phone tonight. We may get him in the studio a little later, but.
Oh, I've known Vince for years.
Well, the point of all this is that Vince and I have a very similar perspective from different viewpoints, but we have a very similar perspective on Disco Demolition.
Mm-hmm.
And while usually we say, phone lines are open and you can text us or whatever. No, this is one night when the conversation about Disco Demolition, we've all heard what everybody else has to say about it over the years. Tonight we're taking it in a much different direction. And if you have a different opinion, keep it to yourself tonight.
Okay.
Because you're going to talk to somebody who helped make the music.
Yes, yes.
Well, and who has a really
strong opinion.
Strong opinion, and I'm right there with him for different reasons, but we'll explain all of that later. Also a little later tonight, Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide, will join us, and we'll talk about some recalls, some road tests, and other things.
Oh, and he did a great blog on CarMax. And we'll talk a little bit about what he learned when he did quite a bit of research on CarMax and what CarMax is all about. And you probably think you know, but I'm sure he came up with a few gems for you. And in just a few minutes, we are going to talk to a sweet lady that we met last year.
Mm-hmm.
And we're tickled that we can get her on again this year. And we'll tell you why when we reintroduce you to Alice in just a few minutes. So you got to stay with us. A lot going on tonight. Yes, we will get to our shout outs in a little bit. I think I did a quick count. We have about 17 states that checked in tonight.
And I forget how many countries. I'm going to have to recheck countries that are checking out our blog, and we really appreciate that too. Oh, and by the way, if you want to go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Steve and Johnny Show, you will see some pictures that Johnny put up of our drive into the station tonight.
Yes, quite a bit different than the drive in Florida.
Yeah.
When people go, but there's no Drake Hotel. Really? You're right. Okay. A lot coming up tonight right here on WGN.
Mammy mine, your little rolling stone that rolled away, rolled away. Mammy mine, your rolling stone is rolling home today. There to stay, I want to see your smiling face. Smile a welcome sigh. I want to feel your fond embrace. Listen, Mammy mine, rock-a-bye your baby with a Dixie melody. When you croon a little tune from the heart of Dixie.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That is Al Jolson and the classic Rockabye Your Baby with a Dixie Melody, which was the number one record back in 1918.
And that year was significant because our next guest was born in 1918. We would like to say good evening to Miss Alice Selke. How are you tonight, Alice?
Oh, I'm just fine.
Oh, it's so good to talk to you again.
And you've
Thank
got a,
you.
And you've got a birthday coming up next week, right?
Yeah.
You do. Alice, you agreed to join us tonight so we could just reminisce with you a little bit. Now, as I recall...
Well, I'll try.
Okay. You live in Hoffman Estates. Am I right? You are living in the house that you lived in throughout your married life where you were raising your kids. Is that true?
Well, I live in the house that my we bought the land, and we come out every week to watch them build this house.
Oh.
And I still live in it.
Oh, my goodness. And you raised your family there. And your husband, now you, as I recall, you were married for 63 years, and he was the first fire chief in Hoffman Estates. Is that correct?
He was the first paid fire chief.
The first paid. Okay, because it was volunteer.
And I believe you were the first fire dispatcher, and the calls used to come to the phone in your house?
Yes, in my house.
Do you still have that phone in your house?
I couldn't go anywhere. I had to be right here to take the call.
Yes. Do you still have that phone in your house, Alice?
No, I finally took them out.
Okay. So what you had to do was you had to stay close. You had to be at home in case somebody called to say there was a fire. Is that correct?
Yes, and I couldn't even go out of the yard because the bell would ring outside, and I'd have to run in through the garage and answer it.
Oh, my gosh.
Were there times when you'd be asleep and you'd be woke up by a fire call on your phone?
No, I had the fire calls in my bedroom also.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Wow. And how many years did you do that, Alice?
Oh, I can't. I don't remember that.
Was it the
a
whole
long time? They told me it wouldn't be very long.
Oh, they told you
it was long. Oh. I couldn't even go shopping or do anything.
Wow. Well, how many kids were you raising when you were tied down to that phone?
Well, I had four children.
Uh huh. So you had your hands full anyway. Now
and then I took care of all the firemen's children. When they had to go out in a call, they'd drop their kids off to
my... Oh, my gosh. Wow. What a life.
So basically, you were the mom for the entire fire department.
Yeah.
So
they called me Little Chief.
Really? The Little Chief. Now, last year, October, they had a brand new fire station that was opened up in Hoffman Estates. And didn't they name that fire station after your husband?
Well... It isn't quite done yet.
Oh, really?
And it is called a Carl W. Selke Firehouse.
Oh, that's so wonderful. And the firemen come by to remember you on your birthday every year. Is that correct?
The fire trucks all drive up in front, and they all come in here to see me, and they bring me flowers. It's great.
Oh, that's so sweet. Really sweet. Obviously, yeah. They appreciate you and the history that you have there. Do you mind if we talk a little history with you?
Yeah.
Can you share with us?
No, I don't mind.
Okay. Can you share?
I can remember.
Okay. Can you share with us your earliest childhood memory, the thing that you, like from summer when you were 7 or 8 years old?
Oh, yeah. My father used to make his own beer.
Really?
I used to sit on the cellar steps and watch him.
Really?
And he used to, and then he also made his own whiskey. And he took a spoon, filled it with sugar, and burned it, and he colored it.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, did he was?
Why was he coloring it? What
to make it look better?
Because the whiskey was white, and if he would burn the sugar and put it in there, it would turn it
like an amber
color.
Yeah, like a whiskey color.
Yeah.
Is it okay if we ask if he was selling it out the back door?
Oh no!
No!
No! What was that back during Prohibition?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So
it was very bad then.
Sure. Did you grow up out in the country?
Well, I grew up, like we call it here, suburbs.
Uh-huh. Were you in Were you in unincorporated Hoffman Estates 107 years ago?
Yeah, we didn't have any. We had to pump the water out of the ground. We didn't have no faucets in the house. Well, we didn't have any bathrooms. We had to cook.
Really?
So can you?
And we had to have lamps with kerosene.
Uh huh.
Can you remember what the first thing was that you would have considered the equivalent of high tech? What was it? Indoor plumbing? Was it electricity? What was the first
big thing?
Big thing in your life?
Oh, the indoor plumbing.
Okay.
I bet.
Boy, it was pretty cold out there in the winter.
Sure. Wow. And it's really crazy to think that that was last century, but everything that we take for granted today wasn't in existence. That's amazing.
No, and I did the 20s twice.
The what?
What's that?
The 20s.
Oh, you did the 20. Oh, you did. You did the 1920s and now the 2020s.
Now you're right. Okay.
You're moving too fast for us, Alice. Really?
Yeah, we're trying to hold on, Alice.
When did you meet your husband, Carl?
Well, we were both born in Freeport, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, my grandmother used to bring all my cousins to her house to play games and stuff to keep him off the street. And he happened to go up there to check on his brother. And that's how I met him.
Oh.
And then he worked at across the street from Grandma's in a bakery. And he told my grandmother told me that he would make a good husband. And I wasn't looking for a husband. I had four brothers. That was enough.
You weren't looking for a husband. That's great. So when you guys got married, then you settled in Hoffman Estates, which was unincorporated at that time.
And well, when we got married, his uncle came out there and he had started a new business, and he wanted Carl to come in and work for him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when we moved in. And we just got moved in and got a nice apartment, and he was called into the Army.
Uh-huh.
Here I was in a big city with two kids.
Yeah. And he had a very distinguished career in the Army. At one point, wasn't he an MP?
He was an honor guard for General MacArthur.
Right. A bodyguard, wow. Honor guard for General Douglas MacArthur. Boy, yeah. I bet he had some stories to tell. Well, Alice, I'm going to ask you if you will just sit tight for us. We just got you warmed up. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back.
And as we started out, we played a song from the year you were born. When we come back, we're going to play a song from, your teenage years.
Yes.
So stay with us at WGN. King and Johnny Putnam at WGN Radio. That's Fats Waller, Honeysuckle Rose from 1934, when our guest Alice would have been about 16 years old. Was that one of your favorite songs when you were in your teenage years, Alice?
Oh, I don't know. I can't remember that far back. It sounds very familiar.
Yeah, yeah. Were you working when you were a teenager as well as going to school?
No, I wasn't working.
Well, good. I had visions of you having to work.
I was working at home.
Well, yeah. And you said you had four brothers. You had no sisters?
No sisters. I was the only girl.
Wow.
All my brothers were in the Navy, but one brother was in the Army, the oldest one.
Uh-huh. Wow. So when you and your husband, working at the bakery, he probably smelled really sweet when you got around him, because I worked in a bakery, Davidson's Bakery, and that's one of the things that I used to love. I'd get on the L train and people would start sniffing because I smelled like a glazed donut when I got on the train.
Well, I would walk up and down the sidewalk and watch him, and he'd always sneak me a couple of cookies.
Great. Oh, gosh. So when you had your first child, was he off in the service at that point?
No.
No?
My children were all born at home. You didn't go to the hospital, man. You had your children at home. My mother had a midwife that would drive up in their little horse and buggy and get out and go into the house.
Oh, my
gosh. I would run up and ask her if she had any little girls in there. She says, nope. No more babies in this house.
Oh, wow.
You talk about the midwife driving up in a horse and buggy. Do you recall what was the first car you had?
Oh, that was an old Kid Lizzie, we called it. My father made me get in the car, and when and I should pull the choke, and he'd crank it up, and the car would jump all over.
It sounds like...
And it didn't have... he had to make a cover it up, because you'd freeze driving in that.
Yeah.
So you'd be in the car, and you would pull the choke, and your father would literally be in the front of the car cranking it to get the car started.
Cranking it up. And that car would start, but it would jump over.
Oh, I just have visions like in a cartoon when the car is alive and it's hopping around. Yes. Well, when you first got married, did you and Carl come to Chicago very often, like for New Year's Eve or anything like that?
No.
No, it was too far?
No, we didn't come in until... He came out of that. His uncle came out and invited him in to work for him.
Mm-hmm.
We're hearing some music.
That's when we moved in.
I see.
We're hearing some music.
Carl went in with his uncle and tried out and see if he liked the job.
Uh-huh.
And then he decided he liked it. And then he came home and we packed up and moved in.
Mm-hmm.
We were hearing some music in the background. What was the music we were hearing in the background just a couple seconds ago?
Oh, that's the TV's on.
Okay.
Okay.
No, I have a clock.
Oh, you have a clock
that
talks.
And when it changes a number, it plays the music.
I see.
My grandson gave it to me.
Uh-huh.
My grandson, Jimmy.
How many grandkids do you have, Alice?
Oh, I have grandchildren. I have great-grandchildren. I have great-great-grandchildren.
Really?
And I have great-great-great-grandchildren.
No.
Great-great-great-grandchildren.
Yeah.
How
wow.
cool.
Are they lucky to have you around? My goodness.
Well, so what do you want to do for your birthday? What are you looking forward to on your birthday?
Nothing. Just sit down and don't do nothing. You see, I have a balance problem.
Uh-huh.
I have to use a little walker fall down, so I just don't want to do nothing. Just sit and watch. I have a thing you call Alexa.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
And I like to listen to that and talk to that.
Oh, well, that's neat, yeah. Because you're still living at home, and you don't have any interest.
I live at home, and my daughter, Barbara, stays here with me, and... I have arthritis too, and she helps me get in the bed and out of the bed, and then I go to the bathroom myself and dress myself, and she does the cooking.
So you want it to be known, though, Alice, that you're not interested in going out dancing for your 107th, right? You want everybody to know, don't come and get me.
A little bit with my walker. So anyhow, my other daughter, Deborah, she comes over then, too.
Yeah.
And Barbara goes home to her house, and then Debbie stays.
I'm sure you know that your daughter, Deborah, is related to me by marriage. Because...
Really?
Yes. Her husband... Her husband's brother.
That Deborah is something else, I'm telling you.
Yes, yes, yes. Her husband.
She makes you feel so happy.
She makes me feel good, too. And I was really happy when I found out that we're related by marriage. Her husband is the brother of my first cousin's husband. So by marriage, in a roundabout way, we are actually related. So I can say I'm related to you at 107-year-old, very sharp, very funny, very sweet woman. And it's just always so nice to talk to you, Alice. It really is.
So, well, thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
And so Johnny would be like your great, 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 great
cousin by marriage.
Cousin once removed or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Will you take me?
I hate to tell you who I'm related to.
Are you related to Al Capone?
Yeah, my mother's brother married Phyllis Capone.
Really?
Al Capone's niece.
I wanted to hear you say that because I had heard that. Yeah, that's crazy. Well, I want to talk to you before your 108th birthday, so we're going to find an excuse to get you back on the radio because it's just so wonderful, and people love to hear you. And
you wouldn't believe some of the really nice texts we're getting right now, people that are falling in love with you and want to wish you a happy birthday in advance.
And they want to be your friend. They said, I want to be Alice's friend. She's so cool.
Oh, God.
Well,
you know, my problem is I don't like all this rain because I have sinus trouble, and it's very hard to talk.
Yes.
Breathe. So I hope it stops raining so much.
Well, you sound wonderful tonight.
You did a wonderful job talking tonight, and it's always fun to talk to you, Alice.
And have a very happy birthday.
Thank you, Johnny.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.
Happy birthday, and we'll talk to you really soon.
I got one of them little radios.
Oh, you did? So you can go to bed with us, right?
The little radio they announce.
Oh, the Sea Crane Skywave radio?
Yeah.
Sure.
Cool. Very cool. Well, Alice.
I got that for my birthday.
Well, you take care of yourself and feel a hug from us. We love talking to you, and thank you so much for joining us tonight. She will be a 107 years old in a couple of days. God bless her, sweetheart.
I want to be that. I want to be that cool now.
I know. Oh, but the memories. Oh my gosh.
Oh, boy.
And
she is so much
you know,
fun.
I have a hard time. I know this. People say I can't remember what I did last week.
Yeah.
And I love when she chuckles and says the car, the Tin Lizzie, jumping around.
What a great story.
Instant replay.
Whoa.
Instant replay.
Got
King and Johnny Putman of WGN Radio. I had to play that. That's a, as we said before the news, it's a bump that is kind of a twofer. It's promoting two things, Instant Replay, Dan Hartman, disco, and an hour from now we're going to be talking about Disco Demolition, but also a little round of applause for the creativity of using Instant Replay to introduce our next guest, who is the owner of Instant Replay in Florida.
Yes, he's also a singer and songwriter and has been our guest singing and talking about songwriting. But tonight he joins us to talk about his business with Instant Replay Sports. He is Aaron Bearden. How are you tonight, Aaron?
Hey, I am fantastic. How are y'all doing?
Good. I'm looking over Steve's shoulder and looking at an awesome fireworks display. If you would just come to Chicago, you could see the fireworks from our studio.
Oh, that's right. I forgot they start at 10 o'clock. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Because we haven't been back here for a month.
Because we were in Florida.
Yeah.
And while we were in Florida, we tuned into, now we've known that you were always a sports card aficionado. And we've told people about Instant Replay, sportscards.com, which is the website they should go to even as we're speaking. But we tuned into a TV show that you're now doing, and we loved it. We were just kind of curious, but we loved it.
You're doing good.
Tell us about TV show and what spawned it.
Yeah, well, thank you. We were approached about the idea of doing some sort of show about collectibles and cards and things, maybe from the perspective of a card shop. My feeling on it was, you know, I enjoy things like the Pawn Stars and the American Pickers when they're telling you about these really cool items and the history of them. Myself personally, I was like, I don't want to do sort of the fake drama, the arguing, behind the scenes, that sort of thing. I'm like, let's just educate people. And what we'd found out was from years of doing this, as you said, we've been in the collectibles business for 35, 36 years now in sports cards. There are just so many, just bad myths and, just misinformation out there, particularly since the pandemic, when cards have gotten very, very popular again, like they were in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, as with so many things, there's tons of information on the internet. It's not all good information. And sometimes people get onto something incorrect and just run with it, and they don't know anybody who can help them out. Mm-hmm. And, there's just such a potential in this business for someone to get hurt with, maybe going after the wrong thing for their collection because it's an investment. Or something it's simple as like not storing their cards properly, not caring mm-hmm. for them correctly. So we wanted to kind of get some of that information out there and let people know what we were seeing, that maybe as one collector, they didn't know it, but, their local shop owner sees that 100 times a day.
Mm-hmm. So you've had the shop for how long?
We have had the physical storefront for 10 years now. Prior mm-hmm. to that, we did 25 years doing card shows and events like that, putting on card shows and all across the Southeast. Hmm. And when I was a kid, my parents actually, I guess they sort of did have a card shop per se. They had a video store back when VHS videos were a thing, and mm-hmm. we had cards in the store and all that. So, yeah, off and on, like say over 35, 36 years now.
Wow.
In this industry.
And is it just us, or we were noticing that there is a major sports cards collectible show that's going to be happening in the Chicago area in a couple of weeks. And it's just been our perspective that over the past couple of years, it seems like sports card collecting is getting really, really, really huge again.
Yes. Yeah. And there is the huge show. There's the what they call the national show, National Sports Collectors Convention, which happens in Chicago. I believe it's every other year. In the mm-hmm. off years mm-hmm. sort of rotate. But, that's a big one. We've been there before. We were just at Fanatics Fest in New York a couple of weeks ago. That's another huge one.
Oh, let me stop you there, because when you were in New York, you did something that was like a pinch-me moment for you, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was a great trip. But which one?
Well, I thought, didn't you say that you got to something, Mickey Mantle's?
Yes. So we worked out something with the Yankees sort of last minute, and we're going to Yankee Stadium anyway. I, we went to Fanatics Fest to film for our TV show. Fanatics was kind enough to invite us for that. And it was just happening to be that it was on my mother's birthday weekend. So I was like, hey, come to New York, Mom. Let's go. We'll go see a Broadway show. And, you know, we'll go to a Yankees game and all this stuff. So I contacted the Yankees. And, yes, we got to do this very cool behind-the-scenes thing where they let us hold a Mickey Mantle jersey and Babe Ruth's bat.
Wow.
And we got to see all the Yankees World Series trophies and got to film a lot of content for the TV show as well.
Uh-huh.
Well, we told them that's what we were there to film.
Well, after the Yankees shellacked the Cubs yesterday, 11-0, I'm glad they won today so that we could have this conversation.
Yeah.
Much happier note.
Much.
Well, we were there for two games. In the first game, the Orioles won, and it was a great, tight, back-and-forth game. Mm-hmm. The kind of game, if you're a baseball fan, you love to see. Every pitch matters. Second game, the Yankees ran away like 9-0. I don't think the Orioles had a hit until about the eighth inning, and it was just, I thought I was back in Florida. It was like 97 degrees. Literally, there were people passing out from the heat.
Oh, no.
For the Orioles fans, it must have been, you know, doubly excruciating, but it was just painful. In general.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, a day at Yankee Stadium, a day at any major league ballpark,
that
beats being in the office.
Well, now you've been to Wrigley, I know, because you've come to Chicago for some of the shows, and you've gone to Cubs game. Have you been to, what are we calling it today?
The Rate.
The Rate. Comiskey.
Comiskey Park.
Yes.
Yes. Which was, what, U.S. Cellular Field?
Yes.
For a while,
yeah.
And,
yes.
I have not. I have a friend who's going up this week, and for the first time, he's going to get to go to Wrigley, and he said he's going to try to sneak in a White Sox game if the schedule allows, just to see both parks.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly hope to the next time I'm in Chicago, which I hope is sooner than later.
And you know, whenever you get back to Chicago, you have to come in and hang out in the studio with us.
Yeah.
For somebody who's just getting into sports card collecting, what's the best piece of advice you can give them? Because a new collector goes to a convention and sees, oh, here's this Mickey Mantle card. Here's this the old Cubs or Sox or Yankees card. Must be a good thing because it's old. But old doesn't necessarily mean good, does it?
Exactly. And old, you know, to what people think maybe related to their own personal age, maybe isn't old in terms of cards. We get a lot of people who come in the shop and they go, I've got some old cards that were my dad's, you know, do you guys want to buy them? Well, to them, you know, they're 24 years old.
Oh, yeah.
And while these cards are from 1989, they must be really old. Like, no, in cards, that's not old. We need to see, kind of something from the Johnson administration or earlier, you know, before we start talking about some old cards. And really old, we want to see, you know, some pre-war stuff.
When did baseball cards start?
That goes back to the 1870s.
Really?
First time there were any baseball players put on any sort of picture cards. But it didn't cement itself as strictly a baseball thing until the early 1900s. You know, you got to think back to before travel was such an easy thing to do, before photography, mm-hmm. and we could, you know, get these images around the world. Some of the earliest cards, they were just putting things on there, pictures of things people might not see personally. So the Grand Canyon, Niagara Falls, exotic animals.
What?
You know, tigers and things. Things that maybe people had not seen if they didn't live in a town that had a big zoo or if they didn't, you know, have access to travel. So a lot of those things were popular. Early stage actors and vaudeville performers and things like that were really popular on cards.
Mm-hmm.
In the early 1900s, they started realizing people were writing in and asking for more pictures of baseball players as baseball itself was gaining more popularity.
Hmm.
Well, but a lot of the early baseball cards, they weren't even necessarily pro ball players. The famous T206 set that has that, you know, the Honus Wagner card that kind of everybody knows about, millions of dollars. A lot of the players in that set, they never played in the major leagues. They played on, like, semi-pro teams in small towns, some of them that were like mill teams or, you know, that sort of thing, because those cards were produced to go in cigarette packs to keep the cigarettes from getting crushed.
Okay.
And they were, you know, they were sold in North Carolina, Virginia, places where tobacco was being produced. So if they had a local team in Raleigh or Roanoke or something like that, they'd put those players in, even if they weren't major leaguers.
Wow.
We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to get you to share a story with us that we've recently heard about why there were a whole bunch of cards that were taken out in a boat and dumped.
Yes, and what that did to the industry. We're talking with Aaron Bearden. We're talking about sports card collectibles. Big show coming to Chicago to Rosemont in just a couple of weeks. And we will continue with him right here on WGN.
Downtown walking, meaningful talking, cars slow rolling like a tiger stalking, lights real bright on a marquee hawking, one night only the whole town's rocking, me I'd rather be at home tonight, home tonight, cause I'm lit up like a Christmas tree, it's all your fault, discursively seeing only what you wanna see has become a near necessity, believe me I know too well when I'm right. Stranglehold still being held, being felt sorry for, still being felt. If I could see you now, I'm sure there'd be sorrow in your eyes. But I'm on my way to a more inviting shore. I'm on my way to a great sunrise.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We're talking sports card collectibles with Aaron Bearden, but you're saying to yourself, well, what did that song have to do with this? Well, that was Aaron Bearden and one of our favorite songs, A Great Sunrise. And Aaron, if people want to get some of your music, where should they go and what should they do?
Yeah, that's a great question right now. No, you can go to my website, aaronbearden.com. And there's music available there.
We
have been so busy with the store and the TV show and all that. I've just really not been playing out as much as I ought to.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully some things will settle down here in the latter part of the year. And maybe we can get back to that. The summer is really busy in this industry, not just here where we are in Florida with tourists, but also, as you mentioned, the shows, the convention season and all that mm-hmm. summer is a really big time for that.
Now, so if you want Aaron's music, go to aaronbearden.com. And if you want to find out about sports collectibles, go to instantreplaysportscards.com.
Now, when we were watching your television show, we learned something that I had never in my whole life heard about sports cards, that there was a point in our history where they ended up in the ocean intentionally, right?
Absolutely, yeah, 1960.
What's the story behind that? Why?
Well, so Topps baseball cards, if you bought cards as a kid mm-hmm. growing up or whatever, Topps is probably the company you remember. They've been making cards since really 1951. 1952 is when they made what we consider the first modern baseball card set. Has that famous Mickey Mantle, one of which sold for over $12.5 million a couple of years ago.
Mm.
And, so 1952, Topps produces these baseball cards. And they're a little bit different from what people are used to. They're larger. They have some stats on the back. And it's sort of what looks like a modern stat block. You know, more of what we'd see today on checking game scores and all that. And, you know, a lot of young players, and it's a big set. It's 407 cards. And they sold them to stores and, you know, really kind of changed the game. Well, a few years go on, and they're continuing to make cards, but they had a lot of that 1952 product left over. Now, at the time, the gentleman who was sort of in charge of the cards over at Topps, it was a guy who had trained to be an accountant named Cy Berger. And he literally sat down and designed the 1952 tops that what we call, you know, modern baseball cards, in his kitchen at his table. He sketched out, you know, it should look like this, and we need the team logo, and we need the player name here, and let's take their signature off the contract they're going to sign to put their image on the card, and let's put their, you know, facsimile of their signature on the card so the fans can see what their autograph looks like. All this great information he decided to put on the card. Like I said, he came up with it at his kitchen table. So he's running around. He's signing these guys to deals. It's kind of the start of the modern, what we think of like the NIL deal with college players. He's doing that with baseball players in a very organized and a very shrewd and smart way. You got to remember, 1950s, early 50s, these guys weren't making the kind of money that players make now. Proportionally, especially to what, you know, a regular, a laborer or someone with just a decent job was making. So he was cutting deals with some of these big-time players like Willie Mays and all, and saying, hey, sign with Topps this year. We'll throw in a refrigerator. You know, that sort of thing. And he was very popular with the players, and he liked to be there in person to get these deals done. So around 1960, Topps realizes they're running out of warehouse space. And what's taking up a lot of space is a lot of these unsold 1952 Topps baseball cards. They kind of printed more than what the market was ready for. So he's looking at, what do we do? Do we set them on fire? You know, do we pay for garbage disposal? What do we do with them? And he mentioned it to a friend of his who said, well, you know, I own a garbage barge. If you'd like, we can load them up on there. We'll take them, you know, 10 miles or so out and just dump them. Heiberger, at this point, he had gone to all the department stores and everything in New York and said, look, just take these cards off my hand. Just, you know, basically a penny a pat, just something. And baseball cards as a valuable collectible, that was not a thing then. So everybody's reaction was, who wants eight-year-old baseball cards? A lot of those guys aren't playing. They're not on that team anymore. The kids don't want that. They want, you know, it's 1960. They want the guys they're seeing right now. So with you know, very few options left, Berger says, fine, let's load them up and take them out there and dump them.
And they did.
When he was interviewed about it years and years later, after cards became this, you know, huge industry, he said he really didn't count how many they loaded. He said he thought it was somewhere in the neighborhood of about 500 unopened cases. Now, each case is going to have, you know, about 20 boxes. Each box is going to have, you know, a couple of dozen.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
And he said he took them out there, and he said, I was happy to, you know, pull the switch and dump them myself just to get rid of them and, you know, felt good about freeing up that warehouse space.
Wow.
For some 1961 Topps cards. Now, that 1952 Topps product that he dumped, those 52 high numbers, and the thing is, they were produced at the end of the year. It's why they were the higher number cards.
Okay.
They were the younger players who came up, the guys who got traded. And by that point in the year, baseball season was basically over. Kids had kind of lost interest. They'd collected all the baseball cards they wanted by the end of the year. So the thing about the 52 high number set is it starts with card number 311. 310 had been in the first few sets. So card 311 to 407. Well, 311 was this Yankees outfielder named Mickey Charles Mantle.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm going to hit the pause button. I'm going to hit the pause button right there because we have to break. That's the tease.
Yes.
And if you can hang with us for a few more minutes, we will get the rest
of the story.
The problem with infatuation.
is it just takes so much commitment. And lately it's been hard enough just to fake the contentment.
Steve King and Johnny Putnam at WGN Radio. That's a little more of Aaron Bearden. If you want to hear some of Aaron's music, go to aaronbearden.com. We're talking sports collectibles, but Aaron, I have to say, one of my favorite lines in that song is, "The problem with infatuation is it takes so much commitment." What a great line!
Yeah, it's the older I get, the more I think about the energy that it takes just to be, you know, interested in things.
So we were talking about the cards that have been dumped in the water.
Yes.
And,
so the year's 1960.
Yes.
And to make some, I'm just sitting here going, wow, were we that stupid in 1960? To make room in a warehouse, and Cy Berger, the man who's actually responsible for this, the sports cards as we know them today, the baseball cards, said, sure, we'll just go take them out in the ocean and dump them. So you said the Mickey Mantle card from 1952 was in that lot that was dumped, right?
Yes, those cards would have been the 1952 Topps cards from number 311 to 407. So in that, you would have had the Mickey Mantle card, like I say, the best one known to exist, sold for over $12.5 million a couple of years ago.
Boy.
But also the rookie card of Eddie Matthews, the great Braves slugger, that was in there, and the 1952 Topps Jackie Robinson card was in there as well. And I mean, this set's just loaded with, you know, Hall of Famers and legends. But it was a very small set. You had, you know, around 90 or so cards in there. So he dumps about 500 cases of these things out into the water. And, you know, like I say, from a corporate standpoint, it's like, hey, you freed up some warehouse space. Now, fast forward, you know, 20-plus years.
Yeah.
Someone finds an unopened case of 1952 Topps high number baseball cards. A gentleman's father had been a candy store or a convenience store. Mm-hmm. He had got a case of them that his store did not need. He couldn't sell them. They wouldn't take them back, so he stored them in his attic. The man's son finds these in the 80s. The cards are, you know, they boomed. And so he calls a big dealer about it and says, hey, I got these cards here. You know, what can we do? And the guy flies there to meet him. He's like, I'll be there within 24 hours. Don't let anybody know. You know, when he gets there, this gentleman has opened the entire case of cards.
Mm.
And in one case, he found 90 of those Mickey Mantle cards.
Whoa.
Including that one that sold for over $12.5 million. They know it came from that find because these cards were in pristine shape in the 1980s when they were opened. They had not, you know, cards from the 50s, kids had played with them, they'd handled them. There were not supplies, top loaders, sleeves, things that we put cards in. Protective cases.
Well, heck, they were putting them in their bicycle spokes so they could get that cool sound.
Yeah, I did that.
Yeah.
We're wrapping rubber bands around them, putting them in a box under the bed. That sort of thing. So these cards are perfectly preserved. Pretty much all of the high grade Mickey Mantles in the 1952 Topps all came from this find. So he opens one case, he finds 90. Berger says he's dropped 500 cases in the water. Well, that's roughly, you know, 45,000 or so if there are 90 in one of those 500 cases. Now, today they estimate there are about 8,000 of those Mickey Mantle cards in existence, ranging from, you know, that $12 million one all the way down to one so beat up you can't tell what they are. That, you know, kids drew a mustache on and crumpled and whatever else. So that card today, you know, imagine if there were an additional 45,000 of those out there in the market.
It wouldn't be the Holy Grail then.
Value.
Right. It would bring the value down. It wouldn't be the, because I think, wouldn't the Mickey Mantle card be like the Holy Grail of collector cards?
It is often considered that, yes. It is the most expensive trading card ever sold, is that one that sold for over $12.5 million. There are three others out there which are known to have been graded as perfect tens. They have not come up for sale in quite a while. Frankly, the three people who have them really don't need the money to sell them, but if they were going to sell them, yes, they would reach crazy prices like that also.
So two things. One, if that those cards that had been dumped, if they had not been dumped, reasonable to assume that several zeros would have come off that Mickey Mantle card. But also, isn't one of the problems with the card collecting industry right now that the millionaires are buying the good stuff up, which makes it even more difficult for the average person to get in and say, hey, I'd like to get a little bit of this action?
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a very valid way to look at it. Now, I know that the millionaires in it don't think that way. Mm-hmm. You know, that they think they're enjoying the hobby as well. And I think, you know, you could make that same comment or criticism about, you know, the vintage guitar market.
Yeah,
sure.
Or, you know, any collectible, old records or coins or whatever, that some of it's just being bought up and kind of being taken out of circulation where long-term collectors have a shot at it.
Well,
absolutely.
For years now, we've talked about how the vintage guitar market was changed by the Asian interest in vintage guitars and buying them up in vintage cars, too, old cars. I think I heard that the Saudis are the ones that are wheeling and dealing in baseball cards. And I'm thinking, why? Why? Unless it's just because they've got money to burn.
Yes. Well, you know, for a long time, it has been like banks buying up works of art and things like that as assets. Because, you know, look, they don't have to eat. You don't have to water them. You know, I mean, you kind of file them away in a vault and they just gather value. So the appeal with sports cards is, look, if I'm going to buy a 1959 Les Paul or a 54 Stratocaster, that's a bulky thing I got to take with me wherever I'm going, or, you know, it's fragile if I need to ship it or something like that. I can get far more value than that in a trading card that goes in my shirt pocket and walk right through airport security with it.
Mm-hmm.
And no one knows what I've got. If I'm walking around with a, you know, like I said, a 54 Stratocaster in mint condition, it's going to draw some attention. I'm going to have an armed guard or something, you know, going along with me. But boy, you can put a $500,000 baseball card in your pocket and nobody knows it's there.
But also, if you've got that really cool baseball card, you have to be careful how you are going to store it.
Sure. Sure, yeah, but I think it's very similar to the art, you know, that we're talking about. They're putting this stuff in a vault somewhere.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's not seeing sunlight or fluorescent light or anything like that. It's going in a box somewhere in a safe.
Yeah.
See, I guess that's where I get that whole thing, but I guess I'm probably in the minority when it comes to collecting, because I only want to collect stuff I like. If it happens to go up in value, that's a nice thing, but I want to read this comic book. I want to play this guitar. I'm not going to just put them in a pristine vault. I'm going to use them for the purpose they were intended to be used.
Sure, yeah. Guitar is a tool. And as much as I would love to have one of those really great, valuable guitars, I do want to play it. I don't want to be scared to touch it because of what I've been. Baseball card, this is where something like grading comes into it. You can grade a baseball card with a professional grading company. They put it in a case that is UV protected and it's waterproof, and it's great. And you can turn it over and look at the back and look at the front. You can see everything about that card you meant to see. And I know, as you know, you're a very knowledgeable comic book aficionado. To me, that's where grading seems weird, is with comic books. And I have some graded comic books.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, as an investment, I can see the front cover, the back cover. I have no clue what's going on inside that comic. I can't enjoy the story
right.
I don't even know if it's intact. I'm taking the grader's word for it.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
So, yeah, it's weird to me.
I think you're seeing a really young clientele that comes to the store, because you are, in a way, you're saying, This is a fun place for you to come. You have events for them. Can listeners outside of Florida like zoom in on those events that you have where people are trading cards and talking cards?
And again, the website is instantreplaysportscards.com. So if somebody is listening to us right now in Berwyn, can they jump on the website and interact with you?
Yes, and we do some online breaks where people can buy in and get a team or something like that. And we open a product up, and they get all the cards that go with that team. That's one way you can interact. You know, if you don't have a hobby shop near you mm-hmm. where you can get access to some of these cards, yeah, that's certainly something they can do. And that's part of why we were interested in partnering with Fox to syndicate this television show, was to maybe reach some people outside the area. We're tourist heavy area,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes it's nice to let people know, hey, I'm going to be going there on vacation a few months, and I want to check out this card shop while I'm there. These people seem to know what they're doing and be on the up and up about it, and kind of looking out for the collector.
Well,
also, that's a big part of the card shop show.
Also, you mentioned syndicating. Can people who are not in the Gulf of Florida, can they see the TV show now on Fox, or what's the latest on that?
That's something we're working on. So the deal was Fox wanted to test it out in the local market first, and they've talked with me already about 20 other markets they want to look at for the TV show. I'm hoping that takes off. By the way, for anybody out there listening, yeah, I own the rights to this show, so we'd love to find a home for it mm-hmm. if someone would want to broadcast. It's like you said, this is a hot industry right now. You know, if you don't believe me, look, go online. There are people, you know, fighting over cards in Walmart and Target and that sort of. It's popular. There are record attendances at the show in Chicago. Fanatics Fest just happened in New York. Huge attendance, not only from the public, but celebrities and athletes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were there. We saw Tom Brady. We saw C.J. Stroud. We saw, you know, a lot of these major athletes and celebrities there. It's a hot industry right now. I'm not going to, in good conscience, say 100% of what's going on in it is maybe sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
It's got its dark sides. Look, there are people out there. You put money in something, there's going to be some bad actors from time to time. But if you're somebody who's looking to get into cards and you want to have some fun with it, maybe share it with your kids or something like that, there's plenty of room in it for you. And there's a lot of ways to have fun with it.
Well, also, Aaron, before we wrap things up, obviously anybody listening to us can tell that you kind of know the drill. You know what you're talking about. If people just have questions, how do they contact you? How do they interact with you? Just to maybe they have a question about values, or how do they get into the
sure?
How do they do that?
Yeah, so they can either hit us up through the website with Instant Replay Sports Cards, and you can send us a message through there. But also for the TV show, we take listeners' questions. So that's at thecardshopshow.com. That's the title of the show, The Card Shop Show. And we do listener questions and, viewer questions on there sometimes and answer them and do segments about that as well. So we've had people write in and, you know, ask certain things, you know, that they want to see explained that maybe they've heard about, but they've never in person mm-hmm. had somebody really explain
right.
it. And we'd love to go over that on the show.
Well, you do a great job at it. And that's why we wanted to get you on tonight, to get people all psyched up about this big show that's going to be in Rosemont in just a couple of weeks. And anytime you're in Chicago, you know, we got an open door for you. So it's always a pleasure to catch up with you.
And
thank
we'll
you.
Be back down in the Panhandle in October. And if we don't see you before, we will see you then.
Yeah, absolutely.
That sounds great. It's always a pleasure. Thank you all so much for letting me come on and kind of talk about some nerdy stuff.
Thank you, Aaron. Take care.
And if you want to check out Aaron's music, it's aaronbearden.com. And if you want more information on the sports card collectibles, it's instantreplaysportscards.com. More coming up. King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That's our friend John Paris.
That's good.
He used to hang out with Les Paul a lot, and that's John's take on the Chuck Berry Deep Feeling song. I love that.
That's nice, yeah. We want to take you back to an hour ago when we had a delightful conversation with Alice Selke. If you missed our conversation, you can catch it on a podcast in a couple of days. Alice will be 107 years old next week. And we thought it would be really, really nice if we could just get a whole bunch of birthday cards for Alice. And we cleared it with the important folks here at the radio station, Marlene and Sarah. And they said, sure, have folks send a card to Alice in care of us. And they will gather the cards up and we'll get them to her for her birthday. And you can send a card. Again, her last name is S, as in Sam, E-L-K-E, Alice Selke. She'll be 107. You can send a card to Our Attention, Steve and Johnny, WGN Radio, 303 East Wacker, 18th floor, Chicago, Illinois, 60601. And if we could get a few dozen cards for her, it'd be
That'd be kind of fun.
A nice surprise. I heard from her daughter who said that she called Alice right after our interview, and Alice said, well, I was nervous at first, but they made me feel relaxed. And I think you could hear it in her voice when she started giggling, and then she started, she just kind of relaxed and started talking about her Tin Lizzie, the jalopy that she, that her dad had.
It was a great story.
Yeah, it was a great story. And I just love the fact that, you know, there she is in the house that she's lived in forever.
And about to be 107 years old and just sounds so much younger. Again, if you want to send cards, send it to Our Attention. You could send it to Steve and Johnny Attention Alice.
Right.
So Steve and Johnny Attention Alice, WGN Radio, 303 East Wacker Drive. That's 303 East Wacker Drive, 18th floor, Chicago, Illinois, 60601.
And thank you to those who took it upon themselves to send a text and say, how could I get a card to her? And you can text us throughout the show at 312-981-7200. And so I passed along that information. If you missed something and maybe you're in the car, you can drop me a text at some point that's convenient for you, and I'll fill in the blanks for you. But if you want to just grab a birthday card, I'm not sure they have birthday cards at Walgreens for 107-year-olds. But I would just love to get a whole bunch of cards. She'll have the fire department coming by with their fire trucks.
Well, especially if you're going to have a cake with 107 candles, the fire department's going to be there, you think?
Yes. And all she wants to do is just, you know, wake up and be happy and enjoy the visit from the fire department.
Coming up, we're going to talk with a guy that we're really looking forward to talking to. We're going to talk about, it was 46 years ago tonight, disco demolition happened at Comiskey Park. And we're going to be talking with Vince Lawrence. He is a producer, a cultural historian, co-creator of the first house music record, On and On. He's also an executive producer of a documentary, Move Your Body. And we're going to get into disco demolition and a whole lot more on WGN. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Before we introduce you to our next guest, I would like to share, as our late friend Paul Harvey used to say, something partly personal. I know exactly where I was and what I was doing 46 years ago tonight. I was living in Bolingbrook. A White Sox fan, watching the White Sox game on TV, and that was the night of Disco Demolition. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I called up Eric Zorn, who at that time was the radio media critic for the Chicago Tribune. He didn't know what was going on. I told him about it. He tuned in. He couldn't believe it either. At that time, I was doing mornings on WDAI.
Which was?
The disco station.
Right.
And
you were ready to address it the next morning.
I really was, because this was... It has been mythologized. It was a very successful attention getter for a radio station and for a disc jockey.
But your radio station said, even though we play disco music, you're not supposed to talk about what happened the night before.
I couldn't believe it. Because I was doing the morning show. I came in early. I thought, okay, I have some stuff I want to get off my chest here.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew we would have more than a few people listening to us to see what we were going to say.
Right.
And I came in, and I'm greeted with this memo: do not say anything about Disco Demolition. And I thought, what?
Right.
I mean, The morning after, it was the headline story
everywhere,
all over the world.
Yeah.
It was a headline story in Chicago and across the country, and it made the news all over the world.
Well, today is the anniversary. It was 46 years ago when you knew exactly where you were. I was an FM disc jockey. We were playing music of the 60s and 70s, and the next day, our program director said, every hour you will play a disco song. Because they were popular songs.
Yeah.
And so we did. It was our way of just kind of sneaking it in there, going, okay, we know what happened last night, but hey, here's a cool song for you, like Earth, Wind, and Fire, Boogie Wonderland.
It was and is great music.
There was an opinion piece in the Chicago Sun-Times. Also, Rolling Stone did a piece by our next guest, Vince Lawrence, who is a producer, cultural historian, co-creator of the first house music record, On and On, also executive producer of the documentary Move Your Body. And we are so happy that we get to finally meet Vince. How are you tonight, Vince Lawrence?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you guys?
Good, good. Thank you for joining us tonight. I know you're a busy guy.
Now, I just shared my experience 46 years ago. Johnny shared hers. Yours was a whole lot more close up and personal 46 years ago, wasn't it?
Oh, it sure was. That 46 years ago, I was 14 years old, and I had gotten a job as an usher at the Andy Frame Company.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that job involved taking people to their seats at ball games. I didn't live very far from Kaminsky Park. So those double shifts were welcome because I was saving up money for my first synthesizer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you were working the night of Disco Demolition.
I was working the night of demo demolition.
Did you demolition? Did you know? Was there like a buzz, like a you could pick up a vibe that something was going to happen tonight?
Or was there a moment when you realized, oops, this is really starting to go south?
I thought that it was a really it was going to be busy that night.
Mm-hmm.
We discovered.
And?
It was going to be really busy that night because when we arrived at work, instead of the slow evening that we would usually get at a night doubleheader,
mm-hmm.
there were tons and tons and tons of people outside.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody had brought a record.
Yeah, that was my question. Did you notice that they were carrying records with them?
Yeah, we were briefed before the evening really began. They said, "Hey, this is 98-cent record night, and if somebody brings a disco record, they get in for 98 cents. So we're going to have them put the records in bins by the gate."
Oh. Mm-hmm. So you knew something was up then?
Yeah. So, and I guess the first weird turn for me was I said to my chief usher, my dad worked in the record business with a man by the name of Eddie Thomas,
mm-hmm.
who was Curtis Mayfield's partner.
Right.
In Kurtom Records.
Mm-hmm.
Legendary man.
Hey, these records aren't all disco records. You know, that's an R&B record, and
mm-hmm.
that's a blues record, and, you know, that's a funk record. Those aren't disco records.
Mm-hmm.
And my chief usher said, well, if they bring a record, let them in.
Mm.
And I guess the real oddity was, you know, if they were making mistakes, disco records, maybe they were bringing artists that just weren't disco. There were no John Denver records in there.
Yep.
There were no George Strait records or Willie Nelson or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, black artists, you know.
And that's really a part of this that I'm so glad in the opinion piece that you wrote that was in the Sun Times and in Rolling Stone, one of the things that you pointed out that I absolutely agreed with, this was, among many other things, this was racial in nature. It was destructive on a lot of levels. And I was as appalled as you were, and I'm a White Sox fan, but I was as appalled as you were back in 2019 when the White Sox did this. I think they handed out about thousands of the night that records were broken T-shirts celebrating it. And I'm one of the people, and I was really pleased to read your column because I agree with you that there needs to be an apology. And I would think that particularly in watching the White Sox over the past couple of years, Johnny and I have observed that the White Sox really seem to be trying to embracing, let's have everybody come to the park. Okay, that's fine. But if you're going to do that, let's also do something to acknowledge the problem with disco demolition. And it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to do some sort of an apology to the people who were harmed by that night.
But that leads me to a question, Vince. In your opinion, who was harmed by that night?
Well, Nile Rodgers was the most sought-after record producer in America
mm-hmm.
the day before, and he says after that night he couldn't get record labels for years to return his phone calls.
Hmm.
The Bee Gees, in their documentary, How Do You Mend a Broken Heart, they said everything came to a crashing halt after
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
They went from playing baseball stadiums to, again, no phone calls, no nothing. Linda Clifford, another Chicagoan,
right?
She said it was very difficult for her to get work after Disco Demolition. The same with Thelma Houston. But let's take away the immediate financial impact, because it's widely circulated that all of the record companies closed their disco departments, per se, and turned away from this after Steve's, you know, event, per se.
Now, we're not talking about me, Steve. We're talking about Steve Dahl in that context.
Yeah, right.
Steve Dahl's event. Yeah, Steve Dahl's event. Let's just talk about culture. Music is a part of most people's culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Polish people have a polka.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of their culture, polka music. And, you know, various Hispanic cultures have the salsa, merengue.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, these songs are part of their culture. It's a part of what makes them them. And soul music and R&B and funk and even disco, especially disco, especially at the beginning, was a very important part of Black culture. And there were lots of artists that were having success, and they were upwardly mobile as a people. And to some people, to the LGBTQ community, disco was like church. That was their church. And I guess when you look at it from a cultural perspective, how do you burn down somebody's church? And what part of that feels right? To publicly lynch someone else's culture. The FBI has a very specific definition of terrorism, and I'm going to try to quickly look that up.
While you're looking that up, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come right back and talk more about Disco Demolition. We're talking with Vince Lawrence, and we've got a whole lot to get to, so stay with us at WGN. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We're talking about what happened 46 years ago tonight, Disco Demolition at the Chicago White Sox, then Comiskey Park. We're talking with Vince Lawrence, a producer, cultural historian, co-creator of the first house music record, on and on. He's also the executive producer of the documentary Move Your Body. And Vince, before we get carried away with some other things, where can people see the documentary? Is that playing in the Chicago area, or what would be the best place for people to check it out?
Well, right now, Move Your Body is making the rounds of all of the important film festivals, and we debuted at the Sundance Film Festival in Utah, and in America we played Annapolis, Lansing, Milwaukee. We were the opening film for the Doc 10 Festival here in Chicago. We went on to play Tribeca, the Sydney Opera House, and Munich, Germany, Lisbon, Spain, and
cool.
I think through to the end of the year, we're going to be touring film festivals, and then hopefully we'll find a home with one of the streaming platforms. It's really important, the film. It explores the birth of house music, but it just really brings home our place with music in this country. And so many Black creators were affected by this. I don't know. I guess this man's frustration with the fact that he lost his job. He lost his job because our community's music was becoming more and more popular. So I guess he took it out on the whole entire community. He didn't take it out on the radio station that decided to switch formats. He took it out on
our community.
But sadly, and, it was viewed as a wacky promotion at the time. And here, 46 years later, we look back, as you do in the film, and you say, well, wait a minute. This is much bigger than just a wacky promotion.
No, I heard a lot of Mr. Dahl's, you know, commentary on the radio, and honestly, disco was kind of code for the N-word, you know.
You really think so?
Yeah, there were things that he said that were particularly, I don't know how to say it, other degrading,
uh-huh.
other than degrading to black people. You'll have to see the film where we play excerpts from Mr. Dahl's radio show that lay that out.
Mm-hmm. So
it's just it was a message. It was a message that we should stay in our place.
But you're not looking for an apology from him. You said earlier that you think that the White Sox and the people that are in management in the White Sox,
mm-hmm.
there's probably nobody there that had anything to do with what happened 46 years ago. But you think symbolically it would be very important for them to step up and say, hey, it's been brought to our attention that this was wrong.
And I agree with your perspective.
I certainly don't think that it's appropriate to celebrate it by passing out T-shirts to memorialize the occasion and having the perpetrator of, as I said, the FBI defines terrorism as the use of force or violence against persons or property to intimidate or coerce a civilian population to further social objectives. The UN says terrorism is any criminal act intended to provoke a state of terror in the public or a group for political purposes. They wanted us to, they wanted our music off the radio, our culture off the radio.
Well, let me ask you this.
That's terrorism.
At 14 years old, when you were in the stands as an Andy Frayn usher, were you frightened?
I was frightened trying to go home.
Were you?
Yeah. Guys were walking up to me. Yelling disco sucks.
Ah, yeah, mm-hmm. sure.
Like you suck.
Yeah.
Like.
And your dad has always been in music. I mean, music has been in your blood since you were born. So
it's a part of our culture.
Yeah.
Just like bluegrass or.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Yeah.
You know, it's just a part. Music is just a part. Everybody's culture has their music.
Exactly.
And
but let me ask you this, though.
I'm going to pause. Johnny's got another question, and I've got a few more. And if you don't mind hanging with us for a few more minutes, Vince, we'll come right back. So stay with us at WGN Radio. Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. All these years later, that still sounds great. I love
good
that.
Good stuff.
We're talking about what happened 46 years ago, Disco Demolition Night at Comiskey Park, home of the Chicago White Sox. And we're talking with Vince Lawrence, who is a producer, cultural historian, co-creator of the first house music record, On and On. And Vince is also the executive producer of the documentary Move Your Body. And just as we broke, I interrupted Johnny in mid-question for Vince.
Vince, the piece that brought us to your attention was the July 2nd Sun-Times opinion piece. Really powerful, really strong piece that you wrote. And then when I started doing some reading, I found that Rolling Stone had done a nice piece by you just a couple of weeks before. And in both of those pieces, you, of course, you mention music that was burned, busted, maligned the night of Disco Demolition. Those people did survive. And I'm just wondering if you've heard from any of those people, like the Linda Cliffords. I just saw she's fabulous. She's still working in Chicago. Chaka Khan has a statue going up in Chicago. Donna Summer's documentary, it was just broke all kinds of viewing records. Have you heard from any of the people that were directly affected by that night, Disco Demolition?
Yes, we've, in making the film, we had conversations with DJs and performers across the board that were affected, and even my local house music community here, in other ways were affected, and we just think that it's not just about financial impact or even in my case PTSD. It's just really when is it right to desecrate someone else's culture? Nile Rodgers said that he felt that it was very akin to book burnings in Nazi Germany. And you know, that's the question. Just where is it right? And it's funny that you mentioned that Mr. Jennings mentioned the fact that the White Sox lost to Cleveland tonight. Cleveland, they changed their name because their name at some point became, you know, kind of toxic for the Native American community.
Right. It used to be the Cleveland Indians. Now it's the Cleveland Guardians. By the way, David, David just left. He stuck his head in, and he said to say hi to you.
I love that guy. I love that guy. He's got the best voice. The best voices out there.
Yeah, sing it. Agreed.
And I just think that the White Sox or Major League Baseball, the White Sox specifically, or Major League Baseball should be apologizing for the hanging that they held in what was at the time the oldest stadium of America's pastime. You know, otherwise they're just saying that the racism that was present that night is as American as baseball.
Have you heard from anybody from the White Sox since your opinion piece was published?
I have not.
Well,
I wonder if they've heard it. But I wonder if they've come across it, but, you know.
Well, maybe we can do our part and make it, bring it to their attention.
We will make it available to them.
And see what they think. And quite honestly, I have a feeling, I can't speak for them, but my sense would be they would say, well, oh, gosh, I never looked at it that way. It never crossed my mind.
It would have such, to my pea-sized brain says, it would have such a positive impact if they would acknowledge the reality of what went on
and
that
just
night.
And not sensationalize it, memorialize it, and say, oh, it's been 50, because in 4 years we're going to look at the 50th anniversary of it.
Yeah.
So we've got 4 years, Vince, to get the word to them.
They've been celebrating this for decades.
Yeah. But
it's just wrong. I don't know. My mom raised me a certain way, I guess. And I can't see the denigration of somebody else's culture as cause for celebration.
You are absolutely singing our song, and we can both hear the frustration even now, all these years later, hear it and understand the frustration in your voice. I would like to continue this conversation at some point in the future.
And let me also ask you, Vince, just to clarify, your movie, Move Your Body, it is not strictly about Disco Demolition, correct?
It is not. It is not.
Okay.
Move Your Body explores young black entrepreneurialism. There's so many stories about, so many negative stories about black youth, especially from Chicago.
Mm-hmm. House music started here, so that's really the touchstone for
here, the. It started here with black youth.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And pretty much on their own, you know, all of us as teenagers started record companies, distribution mm-hmm. companies, promotion
sure.
groups, etc. Today was the 35th celebration of the Chosen Few DJs annual picnic.
Mm-hmm.
There's just it just kind of covers that time
mm-hmm.
and discusses our role, our music's role in society, and what's happened since then. You know,
and
it's funny. House music is now a global mm-hmm. music form. It's the music of the world now.
Yeah,
and it's pretty amazing that it all started here with kids. A lot of people might have counted out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I look forward to seeing the movie. I really do, Vince. And I'm very honest when I tell you, we will do our darndest to get your opinion piece and your piece in Rolling Stone to someone over at
at the White Sox.
Yeah, the White Sox. And just see if somebody wants to come on and talk about it. Because, you know, there might be somebody there that feels that, you know what, I don't feel good doing this either. And maybe we should do something kind of the opposite.
And if we can get a response from the White Sox, would you be willing to come back on with us if we can get somebody from the White mm-hmm. Sox to come on and talk about it?
Absolutely. From what I understand, since I wrote the op-ed, someone's taken that and turned that into a petition.org, a change.org petition.
Mm-hmm.
So that people can sign the petition saying that the White Sox should apologize.
Interesting. Well, okay.
We'll seek out the website and sign it and
yeah,
encourage
and,
people to
and
do the same.
Find out what else we can do in that direction.
Vince, it has been a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah.
And the next time we have this conversation, let's do it in person.
Let's do it in person.
Okay. Thank you, Vince. Take care.
And check out, good Lord, Vince has so many cool websites. We didn't even get to... You need to check out slangmusiccorp.com.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some of the things that Vince has done with commercials. And mm-hmm. I mean, he's a cool guy. He really, really is. So just some thoughts. And again, as I said earlier, you've heard the other side of the mythology of Disco Demolition. We wanted to give you a little different perspective tonight.
Yeah. Maybe just to make you stop and think, oh, well, never... To be honest with you, and I'm going to be 100% honest with you, until I read his opinion piece on Wednesday, it never crossed my mind that this was targeted mm-hmm. toward African-American music.
Right.
And then because I was thinking the Bee Gees, you know, I thought, well, they were right in there. But that long list, and then when you look at how many of these people's careers were affected by that.
Well,
and what happened to Disco Radio, Disco DAI? Did it?
Disco DAI, shortly, it wasn't that long
after that
I left Disco DAI and they changed formats to WRCK and mm-hmm. ultimately to LSFM. But I can't tell you how frustrated I am to this day to
but
have to come in
yeah.
the morning after
yeah.
and be told by mm-hmm. stupid station management at that radio station at that time, no, you can't say a word about this. You can't say a word about the headline story in all of the... And at that point, you had the Tribune, the Sun-Times, the Daily Herald, the South Town Economist. I mean, it was the headline story all over the Midwest and around
Well, I was in
the
Aurora.
Country.
The Beacon News had it on the front page.
Yeah.
And you're right. It was eventually a worldwide story.
Yeah.
And it made the bumper sticker, Disco Sucks, a cool thing, and the T-shirt a cool thing. And I honestly think that the 14-year-olds, like Vince, who might have been at that event, I really, really, maybe I'm being too Pollyanna-ish, but I'm giving...
I can see why you'd be scared to death.
But I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt. I think they were just caught up in the wackiness. Nothing like this had ever been done before. And... what was Bill Veeck thinking?
Yeah.
Because a few years later, I ended up at WIND, and I used to have his wife on all the time. She wanted
Mary
to talk.
Mary Veeck was wonderful.
She wanted to talk to a woman because she wanted to say, hey, this is not just a boy's game.
Mm-hmm.
So she would join me frequently. And honestly, we never talked about that night and what decision went into making that happen.
And you know, from the times that both of us interviewed Mary Veeck, I tend to think she might agree with Vince.
Hmm.
I think she would, or at least would be open
to talking about
to
it.
Having a discussion about that.
Yeah, very interesting. We'll take a break. We'll come right back. Coming up in the midnight hour, it's car night. So Tom Appel will be joining us. If you have questions for Tom, you can get those into us at 312-981-7200.
And out of the break, are we going to do some shouts?
Oh, gosh, we have to. Yes, we will do that. So stay with us here on WGN.
Well, you know you make me wanna shout, kick my heels up and shout, throw my hands up and shout, throw my head back and shout, come on now, don't forget to say you will, don't forget to say say you will, say it right now, baby,
Steve King and Johnny Putman on WGN Radio, say it right now, baby. Time for some shout-outs, and let me start with some of the shouts that I'm continually amazed, some of the people from all over the world that are checking out our blog, and we would like you to join them. It is, you can go to Steve and Johnny, steveandjohnnie.wordpress.com. When you do, we would love it if you would subscribe to our blog. There is no cost. We don't spam you. You just get an email anytime we do a new post. But some of the places checking in with our blog, let's see, of course, the United States, Canada, Sweden, Germany, South Africa, New Zealand, India, Ireland, the United Kingdom, Finland, China, Belarus, Brazil, and Bangladesh. Those are the countries that are checking out our blog this weekend. And thank you.
Yeah. It tickles me, but I find myself saying, what is it that brought them to the page?
I know.
Oh, okay. I said earlier it looked like we had 17 states that were represented by our listeners tonight, and we sure do appreciate that. Sherry and Bob checked in. They were the first ones in here tonight from Arlington Heights. Gary's listening from Lauraville, Ohio, and I think that's the first time Gary has checked in from Lauraville. Jim G is in Wisconsin. Stacy is in Algonquin. Sherry's in Bolingbrook. Bing is listening in Winfield. Butternut, Wisconsin, tuned in tonight. Ken Fault, I think that is Fallit, F-A-L-I-T. Ken is in Ann Arbor listening. Billy D's in Munster. I've got like three or four sources here for my shout-out, so you'll have to forgive me as I try to get them together. Oh, I do want to say a shout-out to Sammich, Illinois. The Manor is well represented by our bubby Bobby Danos.
It's like you were doing a Bing Crosby imitation.
Well, see, I said Bing was listening.
You did, see?
And then
so
boom,
that
it happened. I'm channeling Bing Crosby. Bobby Danos, Debbie Tusick, and Big Al out at the Manor tuned in tonight, and we do appreciate that. Also, we have a great picture that Eric Baum, who's a regular listener, he sent us a picture. It's on our Facebook page, and it's under the promotion for tonight's show. He said he would be listening, as always, from Wells Beach, Maine. The picture, the black and white picture, is of Betty Davis at the age of 18 in 1926, became the first female lifeguard for Ogunquit Beach. The picture is PR for the 4th of July festivities held at the beach. It's an amazing picture of Betty Davis with a rocket on her shoulder. It's crazy.
Cool.
Yeah. In fact, Diane Vasquez, who is our graphics guru, she said, that is awesome. What a great actress and a cute tidbit of info. And you're absolutely right. Peter Jacobowitz is listening, looking forward to Tom Appel. He's up in Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. Peter is, not Tom. James Scalzitti is listening. He said, God bless you guys for having Vince Lloyd. Vince Lloyd.
See, it's first names that send you off into from Bing and now Vince to Vince Lloyd.
I only have 2 more hours and 5 minutes. Vince Lawrence on the show tonight and giving voice to the ugly side of disco demolition. Interesting. Thank you, James, for checking in. Patricia Human is listening from PA, Carlisle, PI, south of the state capital, Harrisburg. Mary Gold and her husband are listening on their clock radio from Tinley Park. Larry Mann is in Miami. Linda Moeller is in Oklahoma in the Panhandle. Nancy Hollins is tuned in from home, and she's in Northern Illinois. Helen Thomas is in Kenosha, listening on her Amazon device. Edwin James is listening on his radio from Pingree Grove Fireworks Extravaganza. I suspect that's over with by now. Lynn Kinzer is tuned in San Antonio, Florida. Ellen Maria is in Marengo, rural McHenry County. John Couture tuned in from Warren, Michigan. Sandy McCumas is in Michigan City, Indiana. Ryan Corcoran is in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Ron Anderson sends us an adorable picture of his cat, Mandy, and they are in Louisville, Kentucky, tuned in. Brian Lefevre is our great listener in Bridgeport, the city of the beautiful city of Chicago. Mm-hmm. Michael Besky is in Carlisle, PA. That's the second one from Carlisle. Judy B. is in Oak Lawn. Nancy Nosick is in South Highland. I mentioned Debbie Tusick. She is in Sandwich. Carrie Johnson, Palm Coast, Florida.
I get hungry every time you say that.
I know. Also, Dorothy Orsini is in Pell Lake, Wisconsin. Wisconsin is very well represented tonight. Chris Pazarski is listening in Round Lake, Illinois. Roy Phillips, Northwest Illinois. Janet Gellert is in Gainesville, Florida. Terry Brock is at the Hyatt the Godzilla Convention at the Hyatt Regency O'Hare?
Huh?
The G-Fest.
How did we miss that?
I had no
Godzilla
idea.
Godzilla Convention.
Yes. Wouldn't you love to get on the elevator?
Julian, Godzilla's in town. Why didn't we get him on the show?
Remember the time we were at a hotel for out in Rosemont?
We were in Rosemont, and it was for one of Lisa McClowry's
shows. Yes.
We were emceeing a show with Lisa McClowry, and we wound up getting on an elevator with some of the furries.
There was a furry convention.
If you've never been, Julian, have you ever been to a furry convention?
Never been to a convention, but I was walking through the streets of Chicago one time, and I saw a crowd, probably 50 furries.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Up State Street.
And for those of you who don't know, it's a thing.
Yes, it's a very big thing. Adults in furry costumes. It goes much deeper than that,
yeah,
I understand. Much deeper. Brian Haig is somewhere on I-55 coming back from Missouri tonight. Rich Wade, one of the Chase twins, is back home in Troy, Missouri. And I should mention, because Rich makes me think of the Ides of March, in a couple of weeks, we are going to have the Ides of March,
yes,
live in studio with us.
On the Saturday night, the 26th.
Roger Camp is in Somerville, South Carolina. Susan Powell's in Memphis. Thought I'd get by that. Mary Ellen Vance is in Shelbyville, Tennessee. Christine Failing is in Plainfield. Lloyd Moncrief is in Ottawa. Kathy Abnor is tuned in. Jan Reinhardt is in the laboratory. Let's see. Sharon Malone is in Kenosha. Robin Aiken is in Port Charlotte, Florida. Kathy Lennon is in the great city of Chicago. Karen Corcoran is in Berwyn. Betty Wilkins
Berwyn.
Is in Naperville. Nancy Tomaszewski is in West Allis. Chuck Snitchler is in Hobart. Thank you, Chuck, for tuning in. Scott Cooper is in Naperville. Beverly Goodall is in Highwood. Bonnie Pearson is in Grays Lake. Petty Ford, Jim Smith, and Diane Vasquez. And I know I missed you, and I'm sorry, but I'll catch you next week, I promise.
Johnny Putman at WGN Radio, and you're listening to one of the songs that Tom Appel, the publisher of Consumer Guide, uses to test the audio system on vehicles that he is test driving. And the theme for tonight's cartoons is what, Tom?
Paris, wee wee.
We just wanted to hear you say wee wee.
Wee wee.
And that was who and what?
That was April in Paris by Coleman Hawkins. Now, we didn't get to any Coleman Hawkins, but we did enjoy some Tiny Grimes on guitar. That's from 1958. The song is called April in Paris.
Which car sound systems have you found to be best for jazz? Because you like a lot of jazz.
Yeah, clean and neutral systems are the best. And Lincoln Revel system, it's a Revel system, is absolutely fantastic. It's clean, it's strong. The definition is super tight. It's a great system.
People think we're kidding, but you actually do use the songs that we play each time we have you on to test the car systems, right?
Well, for the most part, yeah. Sometimes I'm digging around for a song to fit a theme. But, like, this particular album, I love this. This is a very large collection of the works of Coleman Hawkins with Ray Bryant. And it's from a bunch of different albums over a bunch of different generations. But, yeah, this is great music to test any stereo.
Okay. What is the worst vehicle sound system that you've had?
The worst branded systems by far are Toyota's JBL systems. And for people who don't know, a lot of these brands like JBL are actually licensed, and the manufacturer does what they can with them, and then they get them approved by the licensor. And JBL is one of these names that apparently there are relatively moderate standards for, but the end product, it doesn't sound much better than any non-branded system. I certainly wouldn't pay to upgrade to one.
Mm-hmm. Why would a manufacturer want a branded rather than give me the JBL system? I don't want something that just has those letters. Give me the technology that you are known for. Give me what you're putting out of your factory.
You know, it's funny, but in a lot number of cases, there are brands out there like Fender and Volkswagen, AKG and Cadillac. These makers don't actually have a lot of experience in putting together car audio systems. They do wonderful home systems or computer speakers or something like that. So they have the standards. They will license their name, and then the manufacturer has to live up to those standards. And the engineers from both companies will work with each other. But it's actually rare that a manufacturer actually just supplies everything for the system. Way back when, in the first days of General Motors partnering with Bose,
oh, yeah.
Bose actually did supply everything. And some of those systems were really great.
I think I've told you, one of our vehicles is a 2005 DeVille DTS, which has, to my ears,
the best
sound system I've ever heard in any vehicle. It is natural. You can configure it to different. For example, Sirius XM. You can go to the different Sirius XM channels, and you have the option, if there is a rap channel or a country channel or a talk channel, you can configure the sound to give you the best audio for talk, for rap, for country. It's a wonderful audio system.
And it's 25 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you find that characterizing the music like that in this system works pretty well?
In this particular system, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
But again, that was a 2005 Bose system in Cadillac. And it was, to my ears, the best sound system we've ever had.
I've heard some great Bose systems. I think that the company's standards have slipped somewhat over the years. I've heard some Bose systems and late model GMs that were pretty average. Mm-hmm. But that said, I was just driving the Mazda CX-30, which is Mazda's smallest crossover. That had a Bose system that was spectacular. And really, I think overreaching, it was so good for a vehicle under $40,000.
Maybe it's because they don't have Paul Harvey behind them saying, put out that good radio or else.
By the way, I'm just looking at consumerguide.com, which is the website that everybody should go to if you want to get more information about what Tom's talking about. And one of the vehicles that scrolls by is the Hyundai Santa Fe. And over the 4th of July, we had some people over to our house for a party. And one of them was driving a 2025 Hyundai Santa Fe.
Oh.
We took a look at it, and
it's stunning.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a great looking vehicle.
Ooh.
Yeah, Hyundai went top down with the big redesign. So their biggest vehicle, the Palisade, was introduced a few years ago, more than a few years ago now. And it was stunning, right? It looked like a Land Rover or a Range Rover product. And there was a lot there to like and a lot of strong value. And then they went and did the Santa Fe, which slots below it. You can get a Santa Fe with a third row. And they did raise the price on the Santa Fe a fair amount, like $2,500 when they redesigned it. But it feels like that much more vehicle. Mm-hmm. It's great looking. The design is a little bit daring. The interior quality is great.
Oh, the dash is really gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah. They've done so much with design.
Yeah.
It used to be like we waited for Audi to be the design leader.
Yeah.
And it almost feels like Hyundai Kia is taking over that job.
Good point.
And one of the things I was impressed with, some of the features that we found in the 2025 Hyundai Santa Fe are features that we've previously seen in the Genesis. Mm-hmm. And that we're impressed.
Yeah, it is one of the interesting things about what Hyundai and Kia are doing with their interiors and how high quality we perceive those interiors to be, is that they seem to be chasing luxury makers further upscale and further up price, because very conventional vehicles now can be had in very luxurious trim levels. And that's part of the reason car prices are going up, and Americans want that. But you wonder how expensive and how far upscale luxury car makers can go.
And some of the prices with some of the new introductions for luxury vehicles, I mean, we're crazy. Well over $100,000.
Yeah, crazy.
Which is crazy nuts.
One of our listeners who's a real car fan, 872 area code, points out that GM teamed up in 1983 with Bose, and that's why we found those radios in the Eldorado, Tornado, and the Riviera.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember seeing my first Tornado with that system, and it had dedicated speaker boxes. There were electronics associated with the speaker itself. And Bose was always famous for its spatial, I don't know the right word, Steve, maybe you can help me here, but just creating the sense of sound in space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also for creating bass with very little space. And I remember being hyper impressed by the 83.
And creating bass that doesn't sound like over-processed bass.
Yeah. Right, yes. Yeah, very natural.
Well, we just slipped into audio nerddom.
Yeah. As opposed to our regular just dum-dum.
No, our regular nerddom. We're going to take a break. Tom Appel is our guest, and Tom's been a really busy guy. Heck, Tom, I think I heard you on with Landecker recently, and Lisa, and I'm jealous. We've got so much to talk about with Tom. And if you want to sneak in a question for him, 312-981-7200 is the number. So stay with us here on WGN.
Gang and Johnny Putman on WGN Radio. We're talking all things automotive with Tom Appel, the publisher of Consumer Guide. And tonight's Tom's Tunes theme is...
Oui, oui.
Paris. Oui, oui. Oui. And that was who and what?
That was the René Ertrager Trio, French guys. And the song was Parisian Thoroughfare from 1955.
You ever been to Paris?
I have. I was very young, but yes.
How young?
17 or 16. Somewhere in there. It was a high school trip.
Really?
Yeah.
We went to Galena. I'm serious. We went to Galena.
Okay. That's the other direction.
No, I did pay to go to Mexico. I don't remember anything that happened because I was 17 years old with 200 other 17-year-olds in Mexico with two, count them two, chaperones. That was it.
Oh, did you do any Jello shots?
I don't remember.
Which probably means yes.
All I do remember is, and then we'll move on, I remember... thinking, I thought we were supposed to bathe in those bathrooms. Why are the bathtubs filled with tequila? As in bottles of tequila. As in buckets of ice in bottles of tequila. And I'm like, how are we... I was rather fastidious as a teenager. How are we supposed to bathe in there? But after a while, it didn't matter. Who cares? Okay. What have you been driving lately?
I just mentioned this car. I drove, and I love this car. It's the 2025 Mazda CX-30, and I drove that in premium. I lost my test car. Turbo Premium Plus trim. That's as expensive as it gets. But the CX-30 is the smallest Mazda you can buy, smallest Mazda crossover. And it's also just a little premium price relative to other small crossovers, especially something like a Chevrolet Trax. Mm-hmm. But it is really tight. It is really well put together. It is really well finished. It feels like a premium vehicle.
Is it tight, though, for a full-figured person?
For me, it's a little hard to get in and out of. Mm-hmm. It's a little small, but it is a delight to drive. It is really well put together. And here's something really interesting. The top trim levels get the turbo premium engine, as opposed to the base engine. They're both 2.5 liter fours. Mazda rates the premium, the turbocharged engine with two horsepowers, one for regular gas and one for premium gas. Ooh. So you can make your own decision. But on regular, you get 227 horsepower. On premium, you get 250. And I'm sure that the 227 is enough in a car this small. But if you hit the mountains or you want to have some fun, you can put in the premium and enjoy a little extra power.
I like that they're doing that. And correct me if I'm wrong, but haven't those figures kind of been available for years with a lot of manufacturers? But I like that that Mazda is saying, okay, here it is right from the get-go. You want regular, you want premium, here's what you're going to get.
Yeah, years ago we saw this with the Chrysler LH, large front-wheel drive sedans. And if you got a Dodge Intrepid or if you got a Chrysler LHS, they mm-hmm. had different horsepower numbers, but the Chrysler required premium. The vehicles were otherwise mechanically identical. So they advertised a horsepower difference, but it wasn't really a difference because you would see the same numbers if you used the same fuel in the Dodge.
Last time you were on the show, a listener asked a question, and I don't think we got to it, but this is the perfect time to ask their question. And that is, if the manual says premium gasoline, and you don't want to pay over $4 a gallon for premium, and you go for a high-octane regular, are you doing your vehicle a big disservice?
You're not doing any damage. And the only claim you would be doing damage is something that is extremely sporty. And there's some Mercedes and BMW models and the Corvette and things like that. But what we were just discussing is kind of universally true. Not kind of, kind of universally, I guess that's oxymoronic, is universally true. The engine will detect the octane of the fuel and adjust the spark advance accordingly. So you're not going to do any difficulty. There is a small chance, and you should be aware of it, that while you're under warranty, if a car calls for premium, if the owner's manual calls for premium, you should probably use it. just so you don't have to lie about it if something actually happens.
Yeah, good point.
Because if you had to take the engineer in, they could detect what kind of gas you had been using.
I believe it's possible that they actually track that info, yes.
I want to keep you with the Mazda for a second. And if people want to see more about that, go to blog.consumerguide.com. Tell me about the commander knob on the Mazda.
This is the most controversial thing in the world, and it frustrates me because I like it. But it's very much like iDrive was in BMW's 20 years ago.
Yuck!
There's that resistance I see.
Yuck!
It's a little simpler than that, but it's similar where primary controls are handled via a very large knob in the center console, and the menus are controlled like that. So you would rotate through things like media or information or mm-hmm. trying to think what else you might go through, and then you press down to get a new menu.
And you have to take your eyes off the road while you're doing that.
You do it or you don't. Once you get used to it, you can mm-hmm. see what you're doing on the screen in front of you. So if you get comfortable doing this move, this rotating thing and this pushing down thing, you could just keep looking ahead at the little screen in front of you, and you shouldn't need to pull your eyes off the road. Plus, you don't have to lean forward and touch a touch screen.
That's good.
Yeah, I get used to it and I like it, but there are people who just flat out hate it. And my podcast co-host, Jill Simonillo, hates it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and doesn't.
I knew I liked Jill.
You're the one. I hope Jill's listening.
Yeah, and for people who don't know, when Tom initially referenced the iDrive system, BMW has always touted themselves as the driver's car. And mm-hmm. I will never, ever forget, because that's how much I hate it, the first time we encountered the iDrive system, one of the worst systems, because you had to take your eyes off the road to look at the system.
In all fairness, though, we only had it for a week. I think if you had it for...
I didn't want it for more than a week.
If you had it for
a
year...
could they take it after one day? Or maybe half a day?
Yes.
Or maybe an hour.
He was very vocal. And I was doing the videoing, so I just kept, every time he would start complaining, I just hit the camera and start videoing him.
The early iDrive system, though, didn't feel fully baked. That was part
That's
of the
true.
Problem.
Yeah.
Here was a thing with that totally frustrated me. If I wanted to go on the radio from, say, 780 mm-hmm. to 720, you would think I could use that big old knob to rotate to get to WGN. But no, I would have to press down, get a screen where I'd have to select 720 mm-hmm. from a number pad. It was frustrating and really dumb.
Before we take a break, I just scrolled through some of your reviews, and I was really impressed by the Toyota Crown Signia.
Oh, I love that.
It's gorgeous.
Car.
Oh, my gosh. I love the headlights. I love the grill. I just everything about that vehicle. How about driving it? What was your experience?
Oh, I really liked it. That car, first of all, is secretly a station wagon, but no one admits that sort mm-hmm. of thing anymore. And it is based on the Toyota Crown, the sedan that was launched a year ago. But it is a delightful car. It feels very polished and very luxurious. The interior materials could be a little bit better, but this car comes in under 50 grand, so I don't have a problem with that.
And you do point out it is not offered with the more powerful hybrid Max engine.
Right, yeah. They expect to sell far fewer of the Signia or the wagon versions, mm-hmm. so they're simplifying that lineup. So all you get is the standard hybrid system, but it works really well. Plus, I got 38 miles to the gallon.
Ooh.
That's a good thing.
And it's a five-passenger vehicle.
Five-passenger vehicle, a lot of space behind the rear seat for stuff. Rides and handles well, and comes standard with all-wheel drive, which is nice.
And do you say that it's secretly a station wagon because it is lower down than most sport utility vehicles?
Yeah, it pretty much follows the shape of a station wagon, and secretly because there's no way to sell a car called station wagon anymore.
Yeah, so this is true.
They have to be called touring or estate or something like that.
And again, go to consumerguide.com and you will find some pictures of the Toyota Crown. I love the interior. Sort of a caramelish interior.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Tom, we're going to take a break and we'll come back. We got a lot of ground to cover in the world of cars with Tom Appel here on WGN.
King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We're talking all things automotive with Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide. And the theme for Tom's cartoons tonight is Paris, oui, oui. And who was that and what was that, Tom?
That was Stan Getz with a piece called Evening in Paris from 1961.
Nice. Very nice. Tom, do you mind if we tackle a couple of the calls and questions at 312-981-7200? So a listener says, what, in your opinion, is the best manual transmission, new or used?
One of the best manual transmissions, and there's hilarity surrounding my answer, because I would have to get in and out of this car, and if you don't know me, I'm big. But the Mazda Miata, the Mazda MX-5 Miata, has one of the nicest transmissions ever. It is beautifully light and slick and short throw, and it is an enthusiast delight. So that's one of the nicest. Virtually any Honda shifter is good, and historically Mazda shifters have been great too.
It wasn't the Mazda Miata our mutual friend Frank Pyler's favorite car, hands down.
Yes,
I mean he would get goofy over how wonderful that vehicle was.
Yeah, Frank hired me at Consumer Guide way back when, 2001, 2002. Mm-hmm. And he owned a Miata for a while. I don't know if he still does. But yeah, he loved that car. And it's funny because it's one of those cars, it's not that fast and it doesn't make ridiculous growling noises, but it is so simple and so purposeful and just so completely about the enjoyment and action of driving. And yeah, if you can fit in one, I envy you.
And Frank is still the publisher of Collectible Automobile, which is a wonderful magazine.
We got to get him to stay up late sometime.
Yeah.
That's 40 years now, right? That's 40 years of CA.
Yeah, right. Because sleep is overrated, so we got to have him stay up late.
That's right.
We're going to jump to one of our calls, and Ron is calling from Michigan. Ron, you have a question for Tom Appel?
Yes, Stephen Jay. Tom, I have a Ford Focus 2013 manual transmission. Love it. I haven't put tires on there in 3 years because I love the downshift. Mm-hmm. But anyway, what's the problem is starting in the morning, you have to depress the clutch and brake pedal, and it's really hard to start. You get sometimes it takes like almost 5 minutes. Sometimes it's frustrating to just hit that right spot. But once you start it up, there's no problem. I put a brand new battery in. Hmm. What could be the problem, Tom?
I don't know. That's my first answer. Second might be some sort of sensor on the clutch take-up. Mm-hmm. And I think that as the vehicle aged, its area of actuation may have shrank, and you have to be more precise about it. This, if you're a good do-it-yourselfer, this might be a very easy fix. But the best place to check about this might be on some Ford Focus fan sites.
Yeah,
does it make a difference? The temperature. I mean, does it react differently in cold or hotter weather?
No, it's the same. It was the same, but now we're in warm weather, and it's still at in the morning. It just doesn't want to kick in. And it sounds like the sensor. I've asked another mechanic, and he said it could be the sensor too, but. You know, I just love that standard that manual transmission. And Tom, when is the last time they're going to put a manual transmission in like a Ford Focus or some car? I understand it's going to be like eliminated or maybe even has been already.
It is shocking how few manuals are still out there. I believe there are no Mazda 3s with a manual anymore. There's one Jetta, that's the GT or GLI, but the Volkswagen like Type R and GTI no longer manual. as people may know, no Ferrari, no Lamborghini offers a manual. Mm-hmm. It's just disappearing. Part of the problem is there isn't that much consumer demand for it, but the other problem is that advanced driver assistance systems, especially things like obstacle detection, are not compatible with manual transmissions.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Because it would involve clutching in or clutching out to activate the system. And obviously, if you're in the middle of an accident, you can't count on the driver to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And everything is so computer-based now.
Yeah. Hmm. Also, one of the problems, too, is that some of the latter manual transmission setups weren't actually that much fun to drive. The computer control systems, the engine management systems, sort of prevented the engine from revving anyway. And you'd be bouncing off like some sort of rev limiter, and it just, they're not as much fun as they used to be anyway.
Well, I've got to tell you, the worst experience I ever had behind the wheel of a car was trying to learn how to drive a manual Toyota Starlet. Do you remember the Starlet?
This is a true story, Johnny. One of the first things I ever drove with a manual transmission was a Starlet.
It was awful. Do you remember it as being awful? Because, I do remember at the time I was trying to learn in summer, and it was crank windows with no AC. I think the guy spent $3,000 for the car, and he was like, yay, I walked out. And I'm like, really? Why couldn't you put another $1,000 and get a car? Because it was awful.
What I remember about the Starlet, I actually thought the shifter was very nice, but it was utterly gutless. It was one of the least powerful vehicles
yes,
I ever drove.
Yes.
And to get, you definitely had to apply throttle, and you had to get it exactly right as you were lifting the clutch, or you weren't going to make it happen. And I think it would take weeks of ownership to get that right.
Well, throttle is not what I called it while I was trying to learn. I was just pounding the steering wheel. Oh my gosh, memories. Woo.
Speaking of manual transmissions, I want to take you back to last week just for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Because last week, obviously, we weren't here. NASCAR was on. But we did a post on Facebook and our social media pages and our blog, and we mentioned that we weren't going to be here, and we did a picture of us in the Corvette Pace car.
Yes.
And for those of you who don't know, I will tell you the rest of the story, which we did mention to those who subscribe to our blog. I hadn't driven a manual transmission in years.
Like,
I knew how to do it. I
like
hadn't
decades.
Done it for decades. I had to relearn on the Corvette Pace car. That's how I relearned how to drive a manual transmission. And when you're in that car, which obviously no one will pay any attention to,
nah.
What were the colors? It was yellow
purple.
And purple.
Purple with yellow pinstriping and yellow leather interior. And it was a convertible.
And the wheels were yellow, too.
And the wheels were yellow, yes.
And if you got on a hill, and of course, it's manual transmission, and when you go to take out, the car has a tendency to roll back, and someone would be right on the bumper.
They wanted to look at it.
Yeah.
Like, go away. Go.
But as I said, trust me, if you're going to relearn how to drive a manual transmission, a Corvette Pace car is a great way to do it.
Oh, golly. Again, listener questions. We get away from manual and talk about EVs. In your opinion, Tom, do you foresee stagnant EV sales under the current administration?
So, for 2025, car sales were way up until the month of June, and they were way up largely because people were afraid of the impact of tariffs on the prices of cars. Now we have a new problem, and now we know that the $7,500 tax credit on electric new vehicles and the $4,000 tax credit on electric used cars is going away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's possible that what we're going to see is a rush right now to buy electric vehicles, after which they will probably go stagnant. $7,500 is a big amount of money on someone's payments.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going from, say, $60,000 down to $52,500, it's going to have a huge impact. So, yeah, things are going to slow down for sure. Now, we are seeing some more affordable EVs hit the market.
Mm-hmm.
The Chevy Equinox, for example, the Equinox EV starts around $35,000, and it's selling really well. So there's the chance that people will move down to these more affordable EVs, but we'll have to see how that happens. But, yeah, we've definitely hit a slowdown in EV sales.
We're going to have to take a break, but just before we do that, this important thing just in from a 630 area code. Can you have Tom explain his donut takes? Now, people who listen to the Car Stuff podcast may be more familiar with it, but you want to give us the background on the donut and then your donut takes, Tom?
Yeah, I always bring donuts to the recording sessions of the Consumer Guide Car Stuff podcast, and they always come, usually come from Spunky Dunkers in Palatine, and they've never given me a free donut, so this is not a promotion for them. not one free donut. 5 years of podcasting, no free donuts. But
what are you trying to say, Tom?
No free donuts.
No, that's fine. I'm a journalist. I shouldn't take free things.
It's, but, it's like the hole in the donut, a big O.
Yeah.
But I bring donuts. Now, lately, and I don't understand this, and I'm going to make fun of Jill Simonillo again. She's been very picky about her donuts, and she doesn't like donuts that are filled with things mm-hmm. or covered with things.
Mm-hmm.
Like frosting or jelly, very picky. And the last 2 weeks in a row, and this might be what your listener is talking about, I have pictures of her rejecting donuts.
No.
I don't know what's wrong with her.
I saw them, and the look on her face.
Was she horrified?
And like one of them was a double blueberry. It was a blueberry donut with blueberry frosting. That seems like a perfect thing.
Okay,
how do you reject it? It's like rejecting a puppy.
Just before we break, I'm going to tie donuts and Corvette together.
Oh.
From back in the day, I'm at WLTH in Gary doing a record hop. And this was for some local school, but there was a, I don't know if it was a fundraiser for something. I don't remember what it was. But they had the local disc jockey, me from WLTH, and the big deal disc jockey, Uncle Lair. from the Once Big 89, and we were both at the hop. After the hop, Larry and I go out. It was the first time I'd met Larry. Would work with him years later at the Once Big 89. But Larry and I go out to get a bite to eat. And after we're done eating and he's about to head home, but he didn't know how to get to the expressway. So I said, okay, well, let me get my car. I will lead you to the expressway. While I'm getting my car, Larry is in his Corvette in the parking lot doing donuts, waiting for me to get my car. And he had a new Vet, and he's just...
We need to burn off the sugar.
Yeah, I think so.
Donuts.
Oh, golly. Oh, we've got crackers in here. So we're going to take a quick break and chew on our ankle and come back with Tom Appel. We got some more car questions for Tom here on WGN.
Johnny Putnam of WGN Radio. We're talking all things automotive with Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide, and this is one of Tom's cartoons, and the category tonight is Paris, oui, oui. And this was who and what?
This was British saxophonist Joe Harriott, and his song is April in Paris from, I think, 1954.
You think?
Actually, this one I'm sure of. This one is 1954. Some of these songs came from collections, and tracking down the original album is sometimes tough. But this one's actually off an album called Get Happy.
Mm-hmm.
The inquiring minds need all the details.
Okay. Are you ready for some more questions from listeners?
I am.
All right. Listener wanted to know why Slant 6 was discontinued.
Wow, the Slant 6, for people who don't know, was a legendary engine. produced by the Chrysler Corporation, starting way back in the 50s, and it lasted until the 80s. And there were a bunch of different displacements, but we knew it mostly for being a 170-cubic inch engine and a 225-cubic inch engine. And it was deadbolt reliable. People loved the engine just because it always worked. It was one of the most reliable engines ever produced by an American company. It also had a strange valve tick that was part of the soundtrack of owning the vehicle. So much so that a Chicago band called the Riptones wrote a song called Slant Six.
Really?
And tried to emulate that ticking noise. But the engine finally went away just because it couldn't be updated any further. It was a big, old iron block engine. It wasn't suitable for fuel injection. And Chrysler was moving to front drive vehicles with transverse engines. And this huge, old iron lunk was just not a part of that future.
And our listener can actually go to your Consumer Guide blog. And a while back, you did a blog on that very subject. Goodbye, Leaning Tower of what?
Of power.
Of power. Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Leaning Tower of Power. That was a Slant Six's name. And it's a huge joke because there was no power there. It was just a really reliable engine. And people, it was just famed for its reliability.
Interesting. So again, you can check out Tom's blog, and you can even Google Consumer Guide and just type in the words Slant Six, the number six, and that blog will come up from a while back.
Yeah.
Another listener said, do you know if State Farm auto insurance is going to spike like homeowners insurance will?
Well, I don't know about State Farm specifically, but yes, the problem with car insurance right now is if you have a perfectly normal car, and by that I mean not electric, doesn't have advanced driver safety systems and stuff like that, mm-hmm. you could hit somebody who has that stuff. And what we're learning increasingly is that accidents with vehicles that have bumpers full of sensors are very, very expensive. Also, accidents with electric vehicles where the battery is damaged, very expensive. And so we are seeing insurance costs go up. Now, there's been a lot of questions lately about if they're going up too much and if maybe auto insurance providers are sort of front-loading anticipated costs and passing on that front-loading cost to consumers. And I don't know the answer to that, but there's a lot of evidence to suggest that insurance prices are going up perhaps a little bit faster than they should.
Well, I actually...
So there are really two things at question, which is one of them, are the insurance companies, as Tom said, front-loading? And two, because of the problems getting some of these parts and the new technology involved in all of the cars, sadly, I think it stands to reason that car insurance prices are going to continue rising.
Well, I have a piece of good news, though.
Sure.
And this actually is as a result of the listener who wanted to know specifically about State Farm insurance, because homeowners insurance from State Farm has been a big story all week long about how the prices are going to go up.
In fact, I think Governor Pritzker just had a statement on that earlier this week.
So here's an interesting tidbit, and this is from the State Farm website. Auto insurance rates in Illinois will decrease an average of 5.7%, with some customers seeing reductions in premiums of up to 15%.
Well, that's nice.
Rate adjustments will apply to new and existing policies starting July 18th of this year. This decision is driven by trends projecting lower claim costs.
Is that because of some of the additional safety features on cars that
theoretically
are causing less accidents?
Well, they should. An obstacle detection system should, though very expensive to repair, should over time, we should benefit from the fact that there are fewer impacts.
Right.
So,
and there are, I think, there not just State Farm, but a lot of companies give you a reduction if you allow them to tap into your car and see exactly your driving. And if your driving is good, fine, your rates go down.
Mm-hmm.
That's such an interesting thing to do because you're giving up so much privacy.
Mm-hmm. And,
yeah.
But it could pay off.
As opposed to all the privacy we still have.
Right, exactly.
Watch. Now that I look at my phone, I'm going to have State Farm Insurance popping up on my phone trying to sell me insurance because I just read that piece. And I thought it was fascinating, though, when I looked that up and I got to the State Farm page, it was like paragraph after paragraph about homeowners insurance and justifying why the prices are going up. And then this little tiny paragraph, to me, is a huge story. It's kind of buried in the midst of all that other stuff. I mean, the 5% is not huge, but 15%,
yeah,
that's huge.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've been talking about the rising car insurance costs for a while now. So it's interesting that the curve on this information gathering is starting to maybe pair up.
Yeah.
Finally.
Hopefully.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I want to take you in a different direction for just a second.
Sure.
What's with the new, and I was trying to look it up and I can't find it at the moment, the new General Motors ad campaign, something about General Motors in love affair with the U.S. or something like that. Have you seen this?
I haven't. It's funny because I was just playing for my daughter old hot dogs, apple pie,
mm-hmm.
and Chevrolet ads, just talking about just the general sense of patriotism that used to be pervasive in car ads.
But this is something I've seen popping up in particular on social media over the past week or so. Something about General Motors' love affair with mm-hmm. America or something like that. I'll have to see if I can find a specific ad campaign.
I dated a guy that drove a, what's the car that's a pickup truck, but it was a car?
El Camino.
Yeah. Yes, an El Camino. It was black with flames on the side. But across the lift gate in the back, it said, Mom, Apple Pie, and the Girl Next Door. And I was the girl next door. And I was like, oh, that's cool. It was the stupidest car in the world to have in the city. Of course, I wasn't gardening back then. Now I probably love it because you can throw all kinds of stuff in the back. But it was an attention.
Yeah, there's also the Ford Ranchero, and those things never caught on in urban markets.
Yes.
But they're still everywhere if you drive into rural Wisconsin.
Yes. Tom Appel is our guest. We're going to continue talking cars here on WGN.
Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We have locked the doors, so Tom Appel can't get out. Tom is the publisher of Consumer Guide. We're talking all things automobile. And Tom, what was that song we just played?
That was Slant Six by the Riptones.
It was. It's good.
Well, one of the greatest musical tributes to anything ever.
That needs to stay on our permanent replay list.
I like
Julian.
That.
That's fun.
The Riptones, yes.
So, one of the things we didn't get to, mm-hmm. and people would be throwing things at their radio speakers if mm-hmm. we don't get to this weekend recalls. What do you got, Tom?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What a crazy week. First of all, Ford has broken its own record and has crossed the 4 million recalls in 2025. Unbelievable number of recalls over at Ford.
Is the latest one about the cameras, the rear view cameras?
No, there's a bigger one.
Oh,
or
no.
Maybe it's about, no, it's a little bit small. This is 850,000 units, and it's the low pressure fuel pump. This is the fuel pump that's located in the fuel tank. It's failing.
Ooh.
And that's going to involve having to go to the dealer. And it's a relatively complicated fix because the fuel tank has to come out and off. So, this is a big deal. You're going to have to leave your car for a couple of days. But 850,000 units, it's all sorts of Fords, 21 through 23 Bronco, Expedition, and Lincoln Aviator, and 2021 specifically the Super Duties, the big commercial trucks, the Navigator, which is the big Lincoln, plus the F-150 and the Mustang.
Wow.
Huge, okay. Comprehensive deal, yeah.
Let me hold you on this for a second. I know we've touched on this in the past, but I'm going to revisit it. What's the deal with Ford? I know everybody has recalls, but it just seems like Ford has had so many over the past couple of years.
They've had 89 recalls this year, halfway through the year, 89 already, impacting more than 5 million vehicles.
And we should say, now, a recall is not necessarily a bad thing. This is saying, okay, oops, here's something that may not have hurt anybody yet, but to be preventative, we're recalling it, we're fixing it. So that's the good side of this. But the bad side is, why does this happen in the first place, particularly with all of the available computer technology to test this stuff out before it is put into the manufacturing line?
There is an interesting conversation taking place sort of inside baseball in the auto industry about exactly this. And Stellantis and Ford have been coughing up a bunch of recalls the last few years, very expensive recalls and very embarrassing recalls. Stellantis and Ford are also at the bottom of a survey that Plante Moran puts together every year about the relationship between manufacturers and their suppliers. And the relationships between Ford and Stellantis and their suppliers is relatively contentious. It will not surprise you to learn that Toyota is known for having excellent relationships with its suppliers. And Toyota generally tops or is very near the top in quality surveys and very low on the list of cars being recalled. So read into that what you want.
But wow.
It does seem like Ford has some relationship patching to do.
Yeah. And hasn't General Motors kind of swapped positions? Because I can remember a time back in the 80s, 90s, and General Motors was, everybody was yelling at them. And even some people within General Motors were saying, oh, well, see, we can't get the kind of quality that some of the other manufacturers have. So, but that's a weird dynamic. I don't understand all of it.
You mentioned General Motors in the 80s. There was a guy there who was the vice president of purchasing named Ignacio Lopez.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he was known for being an unbelievable hardball player, and suppliers hated him. Interestingly, he would go to jail later for stealing secrets from General Motors. So not a good guy.
Okay.
But yeah, General Motors' relationship with suppliers is much better now, and their quality seems to have improved as well.
Yeah. So lots of Ford Motor Company recalls. What are some of the other recalls on your radar?
Interesting one here, and it's one that maybe we should have seen coming. Nissan is recalling a bunch of vehicles, about 450,000, and these are the vehicles that are equipped with the maker's VC turbo engine. And VC stands for variable compression, and I've seen schematics of how this engine works, but it actually will change the compression ratio while the vehicle is operating, which is an incredibly miraculous thing, but lo and behold, maybe it doesn't work as well as it could. So 450,000 vehicles with this miracle engine, 2021 through 2024 Rogue, 2019 through 2020 Altima, plus a couple of Infinities, I can't read my writing. The 2019 through 2022 Infiniti QX50 and certain versions of the QX55. So a lot of recalls.
Will they possibly have to replace the whole engine?
I hope not, but the problem is a big deal. It's the main bearings are failing. So, yes, they will probably have to replace the engines.
The main bearings are failing, and the letter won't go out until August 25th.
That sounds right, yeah.
Yeah.
Have a nice summer.
Wow.
A bearing failure is bad because the block is probably also damaged as a result.
Yeah.
So, speaking of engine replacements, where are we with the Toyota replacing engine story that we had talked about several months ago?
I will have to check on where they're at. I haven't kept pace with that story, but I believe those repairs are underway. I believe a bunch of them are scheduled, but I will check. Next time we check, I will find out where they're at with that. And
because didn't we at one point figure it out at the amount of time it would take for them to do that, they'd probably be into the next millennium by the time they get all these engines replaced?
Yes, and it's sort of under the radar for some reason, but similar problem at General Motors with their big 6.2-liter Vortec engine.
Mm-hmm.
Similar situation where there's a problem deep in the engine block that they have to fix, and they will probably have to replace a bunch of engines. And they're trying to get the other engines, fixed with just different oil, and I think that is not a long-term solution.
Mm-hmm. Any other ones we should mention? I said earlier, because for a while we had recalls for cameras malfunctioning.
Yeah.
Lots of them, yeah.
Are there any
new ones? There's one more recall that I think you will find amusing, perhaps. The new electric Dodge Charger Daytona 2024-2025 models is being recalled because it is too quiet.
What?
What?
People might know that this started with the Toyota Prius, but when the Prius is in electric mode at low speed, it makes no noise, and it was determined pretty early on that this was a hazard for the vision impaired.
Mm-hmm.
So vehicles are required to make a certain amount of noise in low speed driving, and the Charger's not making enough of it.
Hmm. So thousands of Daytona electric muscle cars from 24 to 25. So what are they going to do to juice up the noise?
They're lucky because they have a system in place that does create the noise. This is really a software issue.
So they'll just bump up the sound that comes through the speaker, and a software will take care of that.
Wouldn't this be a downloadable update, you would almost think?
It would think so. I don't actually know how over-the-air updatable the Charger Daytona is, but it should be relatively modern. It's an all-new architecture, and it is electric, and those tend to be more advanced architectures. So this could be an over-the-air fix, and you don't even have to go to the dealer. But it is just 8,400 vehicles.
Hmm. That takes me back to like 20 years ago when we were doing car reviews on the All Night Show, and we had a very large blind listenership.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some of them were even going to Washington saying, you have to make cars where we can hear them. And that was before we got into all of the EVs and the quiet, purring, whirring cars. And that really opened my eyes, no pun intended, because I was like, wow.
And it's a very understandable problem.
Stand at a crosswalk and close your eyes and try to imagine what's around you.
Yeah.
And you get a different appreciation for it. Yep. All right, Tom, what's coming up next week on your podcast?
Next week, I don't know. but I can tell you, and this is exciting, in 2 weeks, we have Chris Fuel. She is the CEO of Chrysler on the podcast.
Mm.
So we're going to be talking about the 100 Chrysler is celebrating its 100th anniversary.
Wow.
You know, at some point, speaking of Chrysler, we need to, at some point, get our friend Wendy Orthman back on the show, because she has now segued from Genesis to Jeep, correct?
She's back at Jeep. That's right. She's back with Stellantis.
Hmm. I'm going to close with this text from Doug in Naperville. He said, my first car in 1970 was a 64 Plymouth Valiant with a slant six.
Mm. Excellent.
It had 70,000 miles on it. I drove it back and forth from Galesburg to New Orleans for graduate school several times and then kept it until 76. In my first job, I eventually needed a tow to the dealership when I traded it in.
Oh.
Great story.
The first vehicle I ever drove had a slant six.
So. Really?
Yep. I can bond with this guy.
Before we kick you out, blatant plug, people can follow you how and where?
Oh, yeah, consumerguide.com. All the stuff is there, and you can stream the podcast if you like. But you can download and subscribe to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff podcast anywhere. And if you do it on Apple, please leave us a review.
And people can follow you on Blue Sky at?
Oh, I am Car Guy Tom on Blue Sky. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Tom. Appreciate talking
to
you.
Thanks, guys.
As always, a lot of ground we covered. And Tom will be back with us in a couple weeks. Thanks, Tom. Yeah. Have a good week.
We'll take a break. More coming up. Stay with us at WGN.
It's 7:30 in the morning in a Mickey D's drive-thru. Two muffins, one coffee, and a little bitty orange juice. I saw a man with a sign on the corner. I rolled my window down, handed him a dollar. That's when I heard her ask, hey, Daddy, who's that? And before I could answer back, she said, Daddy, look, there's a plane in the sky. Are we there? Did you just see that dog run by? The squirrels have houses in the trees. White guy put stingers on honeybees. It's crazy all the things she sees on the side of the road. Out of that wish I could be more like her. My little dangling feet, pretty and pink backseat driver.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. I love that song.
That's
so sweet.
You
need to check out the video. That's Kane Brown and Backseat Driver. It's one of the songs from his new album. He was a part of the Windy City Smokeout on Saturday.
They brought in some huge talent for these 3 days. And
for Saturday, they weren't short-circuited by rain.
Rain, yeah. Because Friday night, they had to take their 8 and 9 o'clock shows and push them back to 7 o'clock. And so people were going home hours before they planned on going home, which was really a smart move on their part. Instead of making folks run like they did on Thursday night over to a garage where they were hunkered down and hoping that they could go back to
and
the smokeout.
I don't think, I could be wrong, but I don't think all of the artists got to perform on Thursday
night. I don't think they did, yeah.
That's just one of the events going on. Now, there is still on Sunday, there are some other people coming in for the smokeout, John Party, Riley Green. And
if you like country music, you know, there's a whole lot of cowboy boots and cut-off blue jeans and camisole tops and cowboy hats. And didn't we see one news report where they were reporting hundreds of thousands? And we looked at each other and said,
how can that happen?
Hundreds of thousands?
Yeah.
Thousands, okay. But and then they came back and repeated that again.
Yeah.
I'm like, really? Are you thinking about hundreds of thousands?
And that's not...
And that's in the parking lot?
Yeah, the parking lot of the United Center.
Yeah. Hundreds of thousands.
Speaking of concerts that are going on, there's this very cool thing coming up in Hammond.
Yes. I came across this. I don't have it in front of me. Do you?
Yes, I do.
Because
it is the Hammond Festival of the Lakes.
What got my attention was John Fogerty.
Wednesday
night in Hammond.
It's July 16th through the 20th in Hammond. John Fogerty, Brantley Gilbert, Ekon, Third Eye Blind. And a whole bunch of other people at, let me see, it is Festival of the Lakes. Da, 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 da. What is the specific location?
Honestly, I was unfamiliar with Festival of the Lakes. But obviously they have a really good booker that can get, I mean, Fogerty, last time we saw him, it was at Chicago Theater.
Yeah.
It looks like it'll be at the Pavilion at Wolf Lake Memorial Park.
Ah.
Nice location. Yeah, sadly, the last time we saw John Fogerty was one of the worst concerts I've ever been to. Not because of John Fogerty.
Oh, he was
wonderful.
Yeah.
But largely because of the Chicago Theater and the way they didn't maintain any semblance of decorum in the audience, which meant that the drunks who were a couple of rows in front of us, causing all kinds of problems.
Fighting with a dad with his 8 or 9 year old boy.
Didn't cause any problems for us personally, but
we had to look at it.
We had to watch this poor dad who just took his son to see a great concert, and the clowns in front of him were drunk and rowdy, and
The usher came by. They yelled at the dad with the son instead of the people that were holding not one, not two, but three drinks in their hand. And they were holding them like so they wouldn't drop them so they could drink all three because they'd run out to get as many as they could carry. I'm surprised they didn't have carrying trays for you to take multiples back to your seat with you.
It was just stupid.
It was. It was very stupid.
And we should also mention this young kid called McCartney who's doing a Got Back tour.
I think it's the dumbest name for a tour because
I think it's kind of cool.
Well,
from Get Back to Got Back. And one of the very cool things about it is the tour, it was going on, then it was kind of interrupted, then it's picking up again. But it's going to wrap up for 2 days in Chicago, November 24th and 25th at the United Center.
And I think next Tuesday, like you can go online now and put in your information, and on Tuesday you'll be notified when you can purchase tickets.
Yeah, this is weird. I'm at, and it's Paul McCartney, gotback.com, and you register.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many things wrong with ticket buying these days.
Yeah.
Last time we saw McCartney, it was at the...
Rosemont.
And it's mm-hmm. a wonderful concert.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, when we saw him, Linda was still
mm-hmm.
with him. And it was one of the best concerts we've ever seen.
And I saw him at the United Center back yeah. in the 70s.
And I saw him with the Beatles back in the 60s.
Right, right. And his concert tour will wrap in Chicago the week of Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be big, too. And, yeah, you've got to sign up. And pre-sale will begin on July 18th. And I would actually like to go.
If I were going to spend whatever the amount is, McCartney would be one of the people
yeah.
I would spend it
yeah.
on.
Well, in 77, I think our tickets were $175 a ticket, which was yeah. crazy back then.
We always love it when we get a chance to hang out with Ryan Burrow, A, because we like getting a chance to hang out with him, B, because we like giving him the excuse
mm-hmm.
to do nothing for the rest of the week, because I was up all night long.
Yeah, yeah, I can pull that card occasionally. I don't know if I can pull it this week. We'll see.
Well, is this your second night of pulling the all-night show?
It is, but you supplied me with cookies, so
okay.
that right there made it all worthwhile. Thank you very much. They were delicious, by the way.
We had a few minutes to talk before the show, and we were talking about the fact that you went to see a friend's band at the Hideout. And I said, sure, I know the Hideout. Is this the Hideout on Wabansia in Chicago?
No, this is the one just outside of the Now Center in Hoffman Estates.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, it's so kind of like an open-air place. They've got little sections that are kind of themed to a TV show. It's pretty cool.
Oh,
yeah,
interesting, because I was walking down the hall and I said, wait a minute, that doesn't sound like the same place, because mm-hmm. you talked about the group of Polish
yes.
fans that came walking in with, like, a lot of
yeah,
them.
Yeah, Poland was taking on Brazil in volleyball in a huge match. I looked up the tickets, too, while we were there, like $150 to
wow.
see these two
wow.
nations. They're both very good. I cover the Olympics. We've got a podcast on that, and both these teams are very good. And it was, yeah, the two men's teams squaring off against each other. And, of course, I don't know if you guys know this or not, but there's a huge Polish population in Chicago. Have
no.
you heard that?
You think?
Really?
Yeah, believe it or not. No, it really was amazing to see, though, how many people actually have Polish volleyball like uniforms with actual players' names on them. I mean, it was a pretty big deal. But so he starts playing, and then, you know, the volleyball match is supposed to take place, and all of a sudden, like, this like herd of Polish fans comes over, and what started as a group of maybe 50 to 100 people turned into probably close to 1,000. It was pretty
wow.
cool. Yeah.
That's neat.
And what's your friend's band name?
Sofa Kings. The Sofa Kings.
Sofa Kings.
Great name.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I had to, careful with that one. I had to speed it up, but yes.
I have to ask you, what TV shows are themed in the Hideout?
Well, they've got a Friends one. I know that. They had Office Space. Or The Office. I'm sorry, The Office,
yeah.
not Office Space. Yeah, a Tombstone is one of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Tombstone.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. Is that the one with, wait, which was the one with, that's the one with Kevin Costner, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And where is it located?
It's just away from the Now Center, just outside of the Now Center in Hoffman Estates.
So
okay.
when you said Hideout, and then you said like 1,000 Polish fans.
Hideout or Hideaway? I can't remember
because
now.
Because when you
yeah.
said that, and I'm walking down the hall, and I thought, wait a minute, that place is tiny. Like, it's a big deal if you get like 100 people in the Hideout.
Yeah, it's the Hideaway.
The Hideaway.
It's a beer garden.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good. So I was talking about seeing McCartney, because his tickets go on, the pre-sale is Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I, back in the 70s, I paid $175, and that was not scalped.
Mm-hmm.
That was, you know, out of pocket, legit. The most expensive ticket you've ever purchased?
Oof. That's a great question.
Because now they're just insane.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just...
Yeah, we've, you know, I've got a teenage daughter, so there have been a couple Taylor Swift purchases. Not
Ooh.
On the last one, but I think we were probably at $150, $200 per
oh,
for one
good.
Of the Soldier Field shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, this would have been I can't even remember what album it was, but it
was
wasn't the last one.
Before you had to wear an outfit from one of her eras?
And I went to one of them, though, and you got the bracelet, and yes. when they all changed colors, that was kind of interesting. I actually saw McCartney, though, in 2015 at Lollapalooza. You remember he performed in Chicago at Lollapalooza?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I've come to a point now, I'm in my mid-40s, and when these bands and artists come through, and you're like, you kind of want to get them because you don't know if you're going to see him again. Not that he's going to die or anything, but mm-hmm. you just don't know if he's going to perform. And I made one of those purchases. I'm going to go see Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails.
Cool. Really?
Performing at the United Center in August. And, you know, I'm not a huge Nine Inch Nails fan, but when I went through the catalog, I'm like, oh man, I know all these songs. So I'm kind of excited because you never know when they're going to be back, you know?
Yeah.
I will inject into the price of concert tickets discussion. Mid-60s, Beatles, Comiskey Park, $5.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I still have the receipt someplace.
You have the ticket stub.
And then the last time we saw McCartney was...
it was about $100.
Yeah, about $100.
But the station at that time, remember, they had a box at the Rosemont.
Yeah.
So we could buy our ticket, but we could sit in the box, which was really fun.
Yeah, I used to work for a radio station in Memphis, and whenever Memphis in May would happen, we'd have our own tent. You just flash your little badge, and you get in there, and they'd have pizza, and you could hang out in the rain. You know, you could get away from the rain. That was one of the cool perks.
Oh, we used to do that for the station at Ravinia.
Yeah.
That was great fun because we had our own tent and we'd have listeners there and you'd be eating the good food that they would cater there at Ravinia and then go into the pavilion with all the well-heeled.
What happened to all the perks? Where did the perks go?
Well, wait a minute. I had a perk here. Steve hasn't even seen this. I got to be careful how I move. He hasn't even seen this. Was in our mail from the past few weeks. Steve, this is a WGN Radio lunchbox.
Where did that go?
Have you seen this?
I love this. Season's greetings, WGN Radio 720.
It's a metal lunchbox. And it's
where did that come
from? It's got the cutest snowmen on it, and it's very heavy. So let's see what's inside. First time I'm opening it.
It might be Steve Bertrand's lunch. Watch out.
I'm afraid something's...
Be afraid. Be very
I'm actually afraid,
afraid
something's going to pop out. So, wow. Holy... Whoa. Who knew that we had lunch boxes?
I
think this was put together for us by Marlene Wells because we have a Speed Jokes glass. We have a GN pen. We have a notebook. A bumper sticker. Did you know we have bumper stickers?
Oh.
Yeah, we got a GN bumper sticker.
You see many of those on the roadways these days? I haven't.
You don't see many bumper stickers.
Yeah.
No.
Unless you've been somewhere cool like Montana.
Or Branson. Where in Branson, you'd have to pull down your visor if you didn't want them to slap something on your bumper. Okay, but something in a bumper.
One of the coolest, not a bumper sticker, but this will date me. Do you remember back in the days of WCFL where they had their little... There were little yellow sunballs with the WCFL logo that you would put on your antenna.
Antenna so you could find your car. Yes. This is wild. I'm holding what looks like I'll show this for Julian to see it. It looks like a lens, doesn't it? Like a short lens, a camera lens?
Yeah, kind of.
It's apparently a radio.
And cool.
It's got the GN logo on it.
What did we do to deserve all this?
It just came to me. I reached out to our promotions department, Marlene Wells, and I said that we flew back from California with the most delightful 10-year-old child sitting next to us.
And we had every intention of getting her down to the station. And when we came back, you were sick from the plane. We were both kind of sick.
Yes, we were. You're
and
right.
And that's why we had to cancel that. She was, Ryan, you would have loved her. It just turned out we're flying back from Pasadena, and we saw her grandmother talking with her, and she was kind of scared. And Johnny said...
I walked over and I said, you know, I'd be happy to let her sit in the row with us. And she, thank you. So they took her onto the plane and sat her down. And when we got on, I was in the middle. Steve was on the aisle. We talked continuously for 4 hours.
Wow.
So she was
flying solo?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yes. Coming here.
Turns out that she was an actress. She'd been in a number of plays and some movies.
She was in the last Twister movie.
Yeah.
But she was 10 going on 40.
Wow.
At some point, Johnny gets up to go to the restroom. And this nine-year-old, because Johnny had been sitting between us. 10 years old, excuse me. Mm-hmm. She leans over, because now there's an empty seat. She leans over, puts her arm on the sheet, and looks at me, and she says, "So."
what are we going to talk about now that she's gone?
Literally a 40-year-old in a 10-year-old body. She was wonderful.
She was. So I had asked Marlene if we could give her something when she came to the station. So Marlene, I'm going to mail this to her out in Pasadena so she will remember us.
And she has an aunt in the Chicago area. So the next time she gets to Chicago, we will bring her in the studio. And she's just wonderful.
Oh, my gosh. She was excited about being on the radio and seeing her radio station. And gosh, you know, I've done movies. I'm like, really? And you're excited about going to a radio station?
You know, that's funny. I was just talking with someone who put a child on a plane by themselves, mm-hmm. and the plane got diverted to another city, and they didn't have a cell phone or anything like that. So the mother was kind of freaking out, obviously, because all of a sudden a plane, I can't remember where we're supposed to go to, went to a different city, and then they had to board. Everything turned out fine. The kid wasn't emotionally scarred, but the mother, of course, was, right?
Yeah, but the staff is so good. We were flying Southwest.
And I have to give them so much credit because while they were okay, she's going to sit with us, but we could see the flight attendants kept looking at us to make sure that everything was okay with her.
And then when they got off the plane, we were not able to talk to her because they took her to her adult that was meeting her and
her aunt.
And looked at the ID. Yep. And signed off on it before they let her out of their hands. And I thought, well, yeah. But she
was very impressed.
She wasn't scared at all.
You don't want to mess with the moms, because if you know that they'll go online if things don't go the right way. So, get that right. Treat the customers right.
Did you hear that goofy story? I'm sure you did, being in the newsroom, of the plane that was leaving Madrid to go to New York? And everybody on the plane heard a loud noise. And is that not your definition of...
One of the engines went out and they had to divert. And they were, for about 39 hours? They were on this small island?
Of the Azores. And I'm like, okay, well, you're on a beachy island. That's not so bad. But they were waiting for another plane to come and get them to take...
It was a Delta flight, I think.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, well, that doesn't seem that bad, but I guess there were not a lot of restaurants for 200 and something people to converge on this island, this little tiny island that they were able to safely land. I mean, the way it looked, the pilot was headed across the ocean and then made a quick left turn and took the very first runway that he could land on. And I guess they were lucky there were people there.
You guys have heard of Come From Away, the play about the planes that had to be diverted on 9/11 to this really small community. I believe it was in Canada.
It was
based on a true story, and then they couldn't get up in the air. So all this whole community basically welcomed all of these travelers who couldn't travel anywhere.
And there was a period of time where they would go back for celebrations with them because they were so wonderful to them. Like, you know, just to... They were celebrating their friendship that they had developed over that time, that horrible, horrible time. Well, speaking of time, guess what's happening?
Yeah. And
we're rapidly running out.
The blue lights are flickering, and I'm...
There's a Zamboni.
That's big plug Bob and his Zamboni.
He hasn't had to clean it for weeks because we weren't here to mess it up with cookie crumbs and crap.
But that means if you would like to be our last caller, 312-981-7200. That number again is
312-981-7200.
If you would like to be our last caller and win some goodies from this here radio place.
I can't promise you a lunchbox.
No.
But we have some good stuff.
As long as you haven't won anything within the past 60 days or 2 months, whichever comes first from this here radio place. 312-981-7200. And you don't have to have anything pithy to say, although if you would like to say pithy, you can. on second thought.
No, yeah. Spell it first.
Yeah.
I have the hiccups.
Now, I've given you the foolproof.
No.
I have a foolproof hiccup cure that Johnny refuses to try. Julian, next time you have hiccups, pencil.
Or pen.
Under your tongue.
Okay, I'm going to try.
Try to swallow.
I don't know where this pen has been.
And that will cure the hiccups.
I had a teacher in high school that told us, she told us to put a pencil in our mouth and go to the water fountain.
Okay.
I don't know. I probably will have hoof and mouth disease after this because I don't know where this pen has been, but I've got to get rid of the hiccups.
Okay, under your tongue. Ugh. Then try to swallow.
It's not easy to do.
Exactly. But are your hiccups gone?
Out of fear.
Why would that be? Explain to me why this would be, though. The more I think about this, this makes no sense.
I don't understand it. All I know is it has worked every single time I've ever had to try it.
Well, the other one is you put a spoon of sugar under your tongue. And I'm like, what?
And then you put your right foot in.
You bend over and put your head between your knees. Then your hiccups will be gone. By the way, Tombstone was with Kurt Russell. Wyatt Earp was the movie with Kevin Costner.
No, what's the show? Isn't there a show with Costner?
Oh, Yellowstone.
Yellowstone. There was a stone in there. Yes. It's out there in the West somewhere. Yeah,
that's right.
Sorry to all the people who are probably screaming into their...
No, it was the 847 area code. Yeah. They checked in. Appreciate that. They're on top of it. Oftentimes when I make a mistake, I say I do it intentionally just to see if they're listening.
Exactly.
I want to know if you're listening.
Mm-hmm.
See, and when I say these ridiculous things and you call me on it, I go, yay, you were listening.
I think we should take a break.
Okay, they're gone.
It's that time again. We gotta say good night. You know it's getting late. Tomorrow is another day, my friend.
All right, people, it's time to go home.
Yep.
Losing time.
Get on out.
Let's go.
You don't have to go home.
Well, you really do.
But you can't stay here.
Was that Goofy singing?
That's right. That is your closing song by Red Peters. Mm-hmm. And no, we ain't going to play all of it unless it's our last day in radio ever. But you can look it up on YouTube, the closing song, Red Peters.
Mm-hmm.
We got to get that boy on the radio.
I know. We've been saying that for 2 years.
I wish I had a picture of Julian. He was just taking a big slug of something. It's just, what were you taking a slug of? It looked so good.
My water bottle.
Okay.
Oh, did you hear about the water bottle recall?
Serious.
Yeah.
Gosh, am I going to get lead poisoning?
No. The lid will shoot off of the metal water bottles and blinded two people.
This is a Walmart water bottle recall.
So it's the tall, thin, like 32 or 64 ounce water bottles.
It's something with the way they're made that as you go to open it.
It pops off.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid now, okay?
Well, too late for that.
Okay. All right. We're going to sneak in a last caller for tonight's show. Tonight's gone by pretty fast, too, even though I've been in excruciating pain.
By the way, we should remind you, next week, full show again next week. Mm-hmm. Dr. Patrick Crispin will join us. We'll talk technology. Also, Chicago's picture poet, the incredible photographer, Barry Butler, will be joining us in studio with some very cool information on a boat trip that you might be able to join
him
on.
And he's going to be shooting the Mackinac race that day. It's a very big day, and it's going to be exciting, too. All right, I'm going to randomly choose two.
Two is Stephen. Stephen, you're on WGN. Where are you calling from?
Good morning. North Riverside, Illinois.
All right. Well, you sound like you're wide awake. What's your excuse?
Yeah. Helping my mom. She celebrated her 90th birthday Friday by having four teeth extracted.
She knows how to have a good time.
Wow.
Administered Tylenol and antibiotics.
Yeah. So.
Oh,
wow, at 90 years old.
Helping her get to this.
Were they causing her pain?
And I just woke up the other morning and they were kind of pointing out. They just kind of were super loose.
Oh.
Had to take the Tua and the two alongside each of those out. And he's a champ. He hasn't been complaining at all about it.
Well,
and,
God bless her. Wow.
We celebrated tonight with some gnocchi and some meatball and a little birthday cake. And
oh, that's sweet. Okay.
Now, yeah. Now you're making us hungry, Stephen.
We're going to rush home and have cheeseburger pie tonight.
That works. That
yeah,
works.
Yeah.
Well, who's the name of that closing song? Who sings that? Ray, what is his name? Ray what?
Red.
His name is Red Peters.
Red. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yes.
I
Red.
Understand Lee Elia was a big fan of his.
Really?
Well, I didn't know that.
That's a little, remember Lee Elia's
oh,
rant?
Sure.
Oh,
yeah. Who doesn't?
You got to look up Red Peters and listen to the rest of that song, and you'll see why it would be our final song.
If yep.
We were saying, so long, sure. We're done yep. here.
It's similar verbiage. Similar
yes.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Much similar verbiage.
So when you're not being a good son, what keeps you up on a Saturday night?
That was it. Maybe just in, well, I mean, listening to you, of course.
Well, thank you.
Are you happy just doing one show a week?
Yes.
Yeah. And quite honestly, the management at this radio station, they wanted us to come back full time, and they were after us for about 2 years to come back full time. And we said, you know, we're really kind of enjoying having time to do what we want to do. And they said, well, can we con you back into at least one night a week? And we said, well, okay, as long as we can do whatever we want. And they said, okay. And you don't get this kind of freedom in radio these days,
yeah.
And they've been wonderful to us, so we're fine with hanging out with you guys on a Saturday night, and glad you're fine with hanging out with us.
There's nobody more versatile out there than the two of you.
Oh, well, thank you. That's
you.
A huge compliment.
The check's in the mail.
And honestly, I'm spoiled. I got to the point where I'm enjoying daylight. And for 27 years, we did not have that. So, I was the one that stepped up and said, I'm spoiled. I'm loving this. I tell you what, we're going to do, Stephen. We're going to get info from you off the air. We're going to send you an official WGN T-shirt and talk to Julian. And if you've never received one of our 25th anniversary Stephen Johnny Life After Dark CDs, we're going to sneak one of those in the mail for you as well.
Boy, this has been a fast night.
I know.
Again, we remind you, full show next week. Dr. Patrick Crispin will join us to talk technology and handle your computer problems. Barry Butler will join us with information on how to take good pictures and a whole lot more things.
Mm-hmm.
And check out our blog. Go to stephenjohnny.wordpress.com.
And our thanks to David Jennings and Ryan Burrow in the newsroom. And big plug Bob for keeping it all together. And, of course, on the other side of the glass, Mr. Julian.
And our thanks to you for hanging out with us. We'll talk to you next week. Stay safe.